Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
20 federal.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million
shekels. 1 million rubli.
Tribe spoke.
Scheibe trocken.
Ship.
Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Australian Survivor All-Stars. I'm your host Shannon Gus, here to break down week 3. We've been watching this for like 2.5 weeks. We are 9 episodes in. I know I say this every podcast, but it genuinely is crazy the speed at which we consume Australian Survivor by choice, or really what is forced upon us. So this is where we're at, but I'm very excited to have an esteemed guest to break down 3 episodes, 4 tribal councils, like 15,000 twists about, I think, is what we had for the week. So please welcome the runner-up from last season to his first RHAP recap, the great Baden Gilbert. Baden, thank you so much for being here.
Wow, Shannon, hi, I'm so excited. I can't do an impression of Josh, it's too hard.
Yeah, the Josh impression, like doing an impression of you is confusing. It was pretty good.
But no, how are you doing, Shannon? I'm so excited to be here, honestly, to break down this crazy, crazy week, even though I lost a few of my very close season 4 friends, mm-hmm. but that's okay.
Yeah. Your natural enthusiasm is actually, like, perfect. Like, Josh really does nail the impression. You're not trying, but it's dead on.
No, for sure. He knows what he's doing, clearly.
You had an unfortunate couple of, you know, vote outs this week for season 4. It's not going great for season 4. Like, you only have 2 left of 5, but those two, I mean, Dave's not in a great spot, but he has an idol. Like, those two are at least making some waves.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, losing Daisy early was pretty disappointing to me, at least, because I really wanted to see all the S4 people do super, super well. But obviously, some of them had different ideas. But yeah, this week, going to Abby and then John going in the space of 3 days is like, oh, dear.
Not great.
Yeah, it's just not great. But you're right, Harry and Dave are still in there. They're still fighting. So I'm hoping that they can pull through a bit and at least get one season 4 person emerge. That would be great.
Yeah, fun trivia fact that I read about Abby is she was voted out in the show on the same day that she was voted out on TV from your season. So she got voted out twice on the same night, which I find, like, that must never have happened before. I find that so interesting.
That's probably pretty unique in Survivor overall, and also just crazy for her perspective to come back into the real world and then have to talk about everything else that's gone on the first time. It's just such a quick turnaround and so tough for them to mentally work through it all.
Well, at least she missed exit press. That was good.
Just
everyone else got a little bit of reprieve from that in terms of the exit press spoiling people and some of the placements. But Baden, you know, I want to, you know, break down everything that happened this week. There was a lot happening on Vakama. Makuta just went to that one tribal council, but I feel like they are a way more interesting tribe, so I want to talk about them as well. But, like, just generally, what are your thoughts on the season so far?
It's been a bit of a weird ride, hasn't it? Like, I just feel like it's All Stars, which we have to say every sentence now because that's part of the rules, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been tough, almost tough to follow how much has been going on. Like, we've had all these twists and turns this past week, especially. We've had a few surprising vote outs, which if you had told me before the season started that they were going early, I would have been like, what? No way. So that has been really interesting to follow.
Yeah, I think that, like, in terms of the edit, which is something we'll talk about a lot obviously gets left out. I'm less forgiving of it in Australian Survivor than any franchise because it has so much time. So, you know, the confessionals have been super uneven, which we'll talk about. And I feel like something
Absolutely.
That gets, like, a bit lost in, like, the voting structure and something we'll talk about as we start to talk about these tribes is, like, they don't acknowledge at all the relationships these people really have on the outside. I feel like if it happened on the season, like if you're a Brooke and a Flick or whatever, like it exists in the show. But otherwise it's like they're frozen in time. Like they don't act as if these people have had years to get to know each other and stuff. So like one of the major things that I was saying last week is like, oh, well, why didn't Sean vote with Nick? It's like, well, she's best friends with Lydia. So like, that's an important thing that's never been discussed on the show. And if you don't follow them on Instagram, you might not know. This week, something so underrated, not discussed on the show, that Sean and Mo Hope are very, very good friends on the outside. So, and I want to, you know, kind of start by talking about Makuta because I just find them way more interesting. But to talk about that, like, 4-3-2 vote that we'll get into, that's a bit of a missing link because you're like, well, why would Shah not vote with Nick? It's like, well, that would be voting against Mo. And that's maybe something that Nick and Phoebe underestimated when they're asking her to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something the viewers are definitely underestimating because the show just doesn't address that these friendships are legitimate things that affect what is happening on the island. Like, Winners at War definitely calls attention to that, and that's been really refreshing because this stuff is important, you know?
No, extremely. Yeah, I think, like, it's a very fair point. Like, as soon as we get back into the real world, we're not just wrapped up in a box living our own separate world. We've all had this crazy experience together. So, of course, we're going to talk about it. Of course, we're going to catch up. Of course, whenever we're in the same city, we're going to see each other. And that does shape what you'll do when you come back into the game. So it is really important to think, especially within seasons, that these people have these relationships and they do genuinely want to honor them somewhat, particularly, I think, with the, as you highlighted, the Shan and Mo one.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are things like these, like, very natural connections. And I don't know if it's just, like, they're definitely friends, and I know that from Instagram, or, like, they just seem like they should be friends. But, like, it makes total sense to me seeing Harry and AK connect. Like, obviously they're going to connect. It makes total sense for me seeing Phoebe and Nick connect. Like, yes, they solidify that with Pandora's Box. But, like, obviously they're going to work together. They weren't, you know, on the same tribe at all in season one, but they've had years since then to be in the same community, to be literal friends, and this stuff does matter. So if you look at a lot of these dynamics, I think they're, like, more led by, you know, more led by these outside relationships. If you look at Vakamar, you know, should Harry and Shani have flipped, and we'll talk about it, but it's like, is AK gonna go with Brooke and Lockie? Obviously he has, you know, a former relationship with Lockie, it's not always positive, but is he gonna go with that, or is he gonna go with Harry? Is he just better friends with someone like that? Like, I think this stuff is so important, and it completely gets lost in what the show is showing us in the dynamics.
Yeah, absolutely. There is obviously these previous relationships that we said, especially, like, you mentioned AK and Lockie. They obviously had a lot of history in the past and whatever, but also just, like, you mentioned people who are similar. Like, Harry and AK seem like people who would just get along well together, and obviously when you're out there, you want to play with the people you get along with, particularly in the earlier phase of the game. So it's very interesting to see which of those wins out for each given pairing that you can think of.
Yeah, and I mean, let's kind of get to these tribes. And while, as I've said, Vakamar really just had, like, their own pagonging this week and no one actually went home from Makuta, I do want to start with Makuta because I feel like that 4-3-2, it was very much like
it's
the pinnacle
of the week. It's a very interesting split.
Yes.
Which we don't know for 100% certain who voted for who, which is always great. I love that.
I think we've worked it out. Twitter was, like, on the case. Not getting all the votes, Australian Survivor. You know that. I hate that.
I really dislike it when we don't see all the votes. And it's just frustrating because you just want some clarity. And I know that sometimes stuff goes on and you can't show them saying in detail why they voted for who at the voting confessional, but at least give us the montage during the, leaving interview in the last few seconds of the show. At least give us the montage of all the votes so we can see and be sure who voted for who.
Yeah, well, sometimes I think there's, like, an agenda. Like I've said, like, they couldn't show Simon Black's vote for Abby because it was so divorced from what they had shown on the show. I actually don't think that there was an agenda here. I just think, like, Lydia ended up going home, Phoebe didn't. So they showed the most boring split vote of all time. Who voted for John or for Lydia?
They showed Lydia's vote.
So boring and, like, irrelevant. And then they didn't show the 4-3-2.
Yes, no, the 4-3-2 would have obviously been more interesting. There's still a little bit of intrigue potentially in there. I don't know if it's how significant it is, but the fact that we only saw 8 of the 9 votes come out of the urn during Jonathan reading them out, and then in the montage only saw 7 of the 9 votes, there's still potentially a weird vote in there somewhere, but I have no reason to think otherwise. So
yeah, it does make you think, like, what are you hiding, Australian Survivor? Nick says this is why I have trust issues. The fact that Australian Survivor won't show me all the votes is why I have trust issues. Like, I'm trying to analyze the show here.
The last time that we didn't see all the votes, there was a weird vote which wasn't explained at all, and just because of how it ended up, we couldn't talk about. So it's frustrating. Whenever I see votes missing, I start to assume, oh, what's happened? Something suspicious going on, yada, yada. Even if it isn't the case.
Oh, like, they bought no goodwill. Like, definitely not trusting it.
If you do this too many times, people will start doubting. So I just want the transparency.
I do think this was unfortunate. Like, it sometimes happens in US Survivor where there's, like, a really interesting vote, and then on the revote, it's unanimous or whatever, and, on a tie. And then in the revote, they show that instead. Yeah. And you're like, this is nothing.
Okay.
I think for the 4-3-2, like, it wasn't that nefarious, but we did try and piece it together. AK, you know, comes back from the auction and he's like, okay, so who voted against Phoebe? He's like, Mo, Lee, Sean, and one other. Yeah, I'm like, AK, this is very important to Twitter.
But I guess the flip point of that is when Phoebe told AK sitting at the auction itself, I think she did give all four names, right? She said Mo, Jackie, Sean and Lee.
So this makes sense. I want to talk about this vote from everyone's perspective. I think you've got Nick did describe the voting blocks as like his old Maputo 3, so him, Lee and Sean, who didn't vote together. Then you've got, he said Dave and Phoebe, who definitely didn't vote together. He didn't include Zach at all, which is probably fair. And then he has like Mo's 3 with Jackie and Tarzan. So that's how he described the voting blocks. How I want to stomp down on this vote is kind of work through everyone's perspective. So you've got Dave, who I think is with Zach. You've got Mo, Tarzan, and Jackie, who definitely has still a 3, but were split for reasons we'll talk about, with Tarzan, it seems, voting for Nick instead of for Phoebe. And then you've got Nick and Phoebe, and then you have Sean and Lee in the middle. So these are the four kind of, like, the three pillars with Sean in the middle, which I do want to talk about. And I really want to start with Dave, who, as you may know, the main
Dave
character.
And his, Dave and his weird, it almost looked like he was a journalist interviewing people. Like, it just felt like we had this montage of him talking one-on-one with every single person.
Yeah.
And sort of in the lead up to that vote in a way that just looked a bit, I don't know, just maybe it's just the lighting or what it was. It just was like, so what do you think? And just Dave going around one by one just surprised me how many people we got to see him talk to.
I want to have the confidence of Dave for just 1 hour of my life. You know, first night of this week, he's talking about how he's in a 2-7 minority. Next night, he's not just trying to orchestrate a vote instead of being a number. He's trying to orchestrate a unanimous vote. Like, every single person except Nick. So that's a lot of confidence. I talked about this a bit on Talking Tribal, but I just think socially, for Dave and his relationship with Phoebe fascinates me in kind of like a morbid way. I don't love it. Like, the way that he talks about Phoebe, the way he talks about dragging her to the end, I'm like, put some respect on her name, okay? Dragging Phoebe Timmons to the end is not how we talk about one of the best players ever. The way that he addresses her, the way that he goes to her, what is a plan that's not good for her? Nick is, as we've said, her real life friend. Like, Nick is, you know, even without knowing about Pandora's box or any of that, like, you can kind of see how her season one connection, she might not want to give that up. But instead
season one connection, they finish similar places. They play sort of similar type. Like, they were big,
they're friends.
Characters,
like,
on their first season. Yeah, and they are friends. Like, that's the most important thing. They generally like each other.
Yeah.
And have, like, for 3 years. Then you've got this new upstart who's got this stupid reputation. Like, of course you're going to work with the people you know best.
Yeah, and, like, you go to her and not just say, hey, like, I think Nick's dangerous for this reason, or what, you know, or what do you want to do? You know, what allies should do, what Tyson Apostle has often talked about is, you know, put it in their court. He does, like, the opposite of that. He doesn't just not ask her. He goes to, from what we saw, as you said, kind of like a journalist, every single person before her putting the vote on Nick and then comes to her and is like, the vote is Nick. That is not, to me, how alliances should work. That is not something Phoebe should be comfortable with at all. And
no,
when we look at this
Phoebe
breakup,
Phoebe has agency. She deserves, or she is a player in her own right. Like, she should also be, she wouldn't just be floating around unless she really is on the outs. Like,
I think he misreads her. Yeah, no, that's not an alliance. Like, for him to think that that's how Phoebe should be managed, for him to then, like, to give her this plan that is so bad for her, really. I just think, like, who does he think he's dealing with? And then he obviously is bringing Sean and Lee. I mean, he's trying to bring every single person into it. And while Sean and Lee don't vote for, like, with Nick, which we'll talk about, they also, I don't think, would be really willing to give up Nick. And, you know, as they've been described in a voting block together. So I think he's kind of misreading that maybe not everyone wants to do exactly what he wants them to do. And that's the rub. When, like, almost no one votes for you, you know, because Tarzan was on a split. So just Zach voted with him, and he expected everyone to vote with him. That's a very big swing in what he was expecting.
Yeah, that's probably, I guess, the thing about Dave's game is that also this is sort of the first time he's come back from a tribal and not been in control, I guess. Like, I feel like in his first season, he was almost always in the know and in control until he went home. Mm-hmm. So he hasn't had that experience of coming back and being just feeling left out. So that's something new for him, which is always good. Personal growth.
Yes. I mean, is it growth? Because I feel like he just, like, had his supervillain origin story after he got betrayed rather than being like, I screwed up.
That, didn't it? Yeah. Yeah. So it's just interesting to see how he reacted to that moment of coming back and dealing with the fact that all these people didn't vote how he told them to. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, his fake blindside face at the Daisy vote was, like, different to his real blindside face.
His real, like, blindside face is nowhere near as exaggerated.
Yeah, he was, like, just like, oh, damn. Like, I do think that there's been no reflection on why this went poorly for him. You know, it's all the blame on Phoebe, which, again, I feel just really weird about. She's, like, groveling to him, and we'll talk about Phoebe's plan, but it sounded like, and for numbers reasons, that we didn't see them talking to Dave, but I assume Dave was in their plan because he's the fifth. They say that they're going to have the four of them, so Nick, Phoebe, Lee, Sean, and Dave. So it seems like two stubborn people for reasons. Phoebe's probably a better reason because she doesn't want to lose her actual ally, Nick, and I still don't understand really why Dave was so adamant on Nick. But, like, it seems like these two stubborn people just didn't vote together, but it's all Phoebe's fault. Like, that to me is concerning. Like, if I was Phoebe, I would not trust Dave at all. I feel like that's a very dangerous relationship for her. It's almost Hansian to me. Like, it's almost like Russell has some and Parvati to a degree where it's like, firstly, why did he want Nick out so much? I do think there's an element of, like, is he threatened by her relationship with Phoebe? And the way that she was groveling to him and stuff, it's like scare tactics and intimidation, and this is not, there's no, it's just, it's kind of like, it's a little toxic, to be honest. Like, I see some toxicity there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I guess the other interesting sort of wrinkle to feature in this Dave Phoebe sort of relationship at this point is that from social media stuff, I believe the young, what do we call them? The Young Attractive Alliance? Is that their name from the pre-swap?
Yeah, Buckler? Really rolls off the tongue. Young Attractive
Alliance. Yeah, it's a really, really good name. So the group of them have, obviously know that there's a mole somewhere amongst them. And from what it sounds like, they had sort of settled on Dave being that mole, and potentially, if they had gone to trial before swap, we would have seen that interaction play out.
Yeah.
But then, of course, they got swapped away. And not only did they get swapped away, it's Dave and Phoebe, and everyone else is on the other side.
Yes.
So Phoebe's sort of mentally gone from, we're going to blindside Dave because he was the mole, to, oh, God, I have to work with Dave now, which is not a great place to be for her, really.
Yeah, it's so true. And that's why she has to go and grovel to Dave. Like, she's betrayed him. But the thing is, like, look, firstly, Dave, she got voted out. Like, hasn't the poor woman suffered enough? Like, for, you know, you're so mad about how she voted, and she paid for it with, like, the highest price, basically, of having to fight for her life in fire. Like, let it go, man. Secondly, like, even if she'd voted with him for Nick, her other closest ally, her only other ally really in this tribe that we can see, she would have still gone home because it would have been a 4-4-1, and I'm sure that the Mo contingent and Lee and Sean are voting her out on the re-vote. So, like, Dave is so mad at her.
Exactly,
Dave did not have the numbers, and Phoebe didn't have the numbers. So in this whole mishmash of a very confusing vote, she was going to vote herself out basically anyway. Like, it was happening anyway. It still didn't go well for her.
It's,
they basically
it really
didn't have,
like,
the numbers.
Yeah,
like, why is he so mad about it?
It just feels like Nick and Phoebe are sort of not separate in a way, but just, like, not with the rest of them, even though some of them are obviously on the outs with others for different reasons. It just feels like they're on a different, the different types of people again. It just sort of comes back to that. Like, Dave is in his own category, always and forever. But you look at, like, for example, you've got your Jackie, Mo, and Tarzan and Zach. Like, they're just sort of different players to how Nick and Phoebe play. So it's just, and then Lee and Sean somewhere in the middle as well, I guess. So it's just tough for these two to come into this swap and not have the people that they're maybe hoping to have with them.
At its simplest, if Dave and Phoebe were on the same page, they'd still be in a tricky situation because there's the Mo side. Then there'd be them and, you know, maybe Nick and Zach, but Nick and Zach are fractured. Then Lee and Sean are in the middle, but as I've said, Sean and Mo are really good friends. And then there's a complication that Dave doesn't even want to work with Nick. So I just feel like for Phoebe, if she's just voting up for Nick, like, she just is accepting going home. At least she had another plan to kind of try and take control, which Dave didn't want to go with, and she didn't want to go with his plan. Like, I just cannot understand why this is on Phoebe. Like,
it is interesting. It's also additionally the fact that we got a lot of confessionals from Mo this week, which is good. It's good to hear her talking about what she's doing. But it just seemed, especially in the episode of that vote, it was more, we're taking out Phoebe to weaken Dave. Which is fine, like, but at the same time, like, if you're so worried about Dave, why not take out Dave?
Yes, I do want to talk about this from Mo.
Yes, that is an interesting wrinkle, of course, that we then go on to later see Mo say something along the lines of, I want Dave to work with me, and he'll work with me when he's weakened, yada yada. So the logic was there, but just in the moment of that episode, it felt like you're targeting Phoebe to hurt Dave, which didn't quite make sense to me. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. In terms of, like, Phoebe and Dave, it honestly reminds me of, like, a bad relationship where, like, if one person has no power in a romantic relationship, like, they're going to apologize even if they didn't do the thing wrong. And that's how I feel like what happened with Phoebe, like, got voted out, you know, did as much wrong as Dave, which was, like, didn't want to stray from her plan, but to more detriment to her game just because she was in a worse position, and is now just, like, being raped. Like, Dave is just so unforgiving about that. So, yes, I mean, talking about Dave's vindictiveness, we just saw what he did to Daisy. I don't love
this
promo.
Yes, exactly.
And she's been getting a lot of praise for the move. I don't like it, because I think that we saw the results of what happens when you spook Dave. Like, you want to take out his number one ally. Like, either work with him or don't. But this half measure of working with Dave, I think, is really dangerous, because he's such a dangerous player.
Oh, Dave is an extremely dangerous player, to the point where he probably should have gone first. Like, I know that in All Stars, it's All Stars. Did I say that yet?
Is it?
Everyone is dangerous. Yes, it is, apparently. Yeah, I didn't know. Everyone's dangerous for different reasons. But, like, Dave must be up there. And I know they didn't get to see his full season run out before they left. But at the same time, he'd already had such... They saw most of it. And he obviously had such a reputation at that point that surely you just can't risk letting him get into the game. Like... Yeah,
if anything, know, like, yeah, they had just seen all the important stuff, like, right then. Like, they had just seen the popcorn reward on TV. Like, they had, like, the clearest, most
recent
idea.
They'd seen him get out of the 2-7 minority. Like, he had done all this crazy stuff. So, and I don't know if they managed to see his blindside exit itself, but at least got right up close to it. So they knew that he's a big player and plays in crazy ways and makes fake idols and does all this other crazy stuff. So,
yeah,
it's just, it's very much a... two-edged sword, is that what I'm going for here?
A what?
Maybe. The two-edged sword?
Oh, yeah, double-edged sword, yes.
Yeah, double-edged sword, thank you. In that he's obviously very powerful, and if he's working in your best interest, then that's great, but he can also flip at a moment's notice and suddenly you're screwed.
Can I just say, for Mo, like, I feel like she lucked out here, because in a different world, Phoebe votes with Dave for Nick. Goes to fire, wins fire, or doesn't, or whatever happens in terms of her going home. But in a way that she doesn't actually, you know, betray, in quotation marks, Dave, I think Dave would be livid. Like, he's most only been saved from what, like, she tried to do to Dave, and, like, technically successfully did to him by, you know, voting out his right-hand woman, because Phoebe isn't Dave's right-hand woman anymore in his mind.
No, it isn't.
So
that's
angry.
The part that confuses me. Like, Mo sees Dave and Phoebe as this power couple approaching sort of thing, or big power dynamic in the tribe. Whereas I don't think it's as strong as Mo sees it to be. So it's almost like Phoebe's being targeted for a perception that doesn't quite exist, which is not great.
Yeah, but, like, even more than that, like, it's definitely not a thing now. Like, I think Dave wouldn't have loved the attack on his ego. Like, if he still saw that Phoebe was his right-hand woman and Mo went, after they had their conversation about working together, and Mo went for someone to hurt Dave, I think he would be even more spooked, even angrier. I don't know how much more he could do than just, like, finding the idol, which is something he's already done.
Yes.
But, you know, his relationship with Mo, at least they seem like they might be getting onto a similar page, but I think that... You know, we'd be seeing Dave out for blood if Phoebe hadn't actively betrayed him. Now he's so mad about that he can kind of, like, he's just, like, so hyper-focused on that I think Mo got really lucky. In a world where Phoebe doesn't betray Dave, he's probably way, way, way angry at Mo. That's not something that she prepared for. I just cannot condone the move of spooking Dave without voting him out when you have him where you want him. Like, at that point, I know he has a relationship with Matt Rogers, but you really have to pick a side of, like, work with him fully, include Phoebe in that, like, make your own majority, or probably more likely just take out Dave at that point because he's so dangerous. Because I think it still didn't work out great for her because Dave is kind of onto it, has more power, knows he needs to be hustling, and it would have been even worse if he was, like, way, way, way more out for blood if this whole Phoebe thing hadn't kind of, like, wrecked everything.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, Dave is obviously very vindictive, and he's obviously got all these people he wants to go for now because of what's happened with that vote. So Mo is sort of lucky in that regard, that obviously he's upset with Phoebe more so than he is with Mo.
Yeah, it might be like an ego thing, but, like, yeah, I mean, Mo, I think, got all of the praise for this 4-3-2, and she did win it. I still think she was, like, somewhat blindsided in that I think she thought she had Nick's vote. No one would be going in thinking it was a 5-3-2. She wouldn't be splitting votes on a plurality, I have to assume. So I do think that she thought it was going to be, you know, she had at least five votes even with the split vote, the four that she voted with and Nick. So no one fully knew what was going on, which is what's crazy about this vote.
Yeah, that's always fascinating to have a plurality vote. No one knows exactly what's
except
going
on. Except Sean. We'll talk about Sean.
Yeah, actually. I think she did know all the plans, actually. So, yeah, that's a very good point. Like, Sean and Lee is also sort of just in the sort of a nice spot at the moment.
They're in the middle of this, like, this triangle that happened. But, yeah, Mo, like, in terms of, like, the three people leading plans, like, the BB Nick contingent, the Dave contingent, and Mo, like, she got the most votes. You know, definitely kudos to her for that. But I also think, like, the plan was so convoluted. She's throwing votes onto Nick, so Dave thinks she's more working with him. Like, I don't even get how that would really work. I think it was way too complicated. Then she's got to do all this damage control, which she seems to have done kind of well, telling Dave Phoebe was out for him. But again, she's helped along by that, by a situation she didn't create in this huge Phoebe-Dave fracture. I can't envision what that conversation looks like. You know, is Dave so willing to hear, oh, Phoebe was coming for you before the merge, if Phoebe never betrayed him or betrayed... Again, betrayed is always going to be in quotation marks when I talk about what Phoebe did to Dave. Is he so willing to hear that? I don't know. That's a completely different relationship and situation at that point.
Yeah, it's just... It is obviously also interesting. Like, it's not like Phoebe's going to target Dave. Like, no one's targeted Dave. Like, the betrayal is there, but, like, they targeted Mo of all people. So I guess that also gives Mo extra ammo to be upset and to try and work with Dave or whatever. But it's still just a very messy, like you said, a three-cornered tribe with people in the middle. It's just hard to know how the next vote would go.
Yeah, I think that, like, Mo kind of landed with her bum in the butter on this tribe, like, to kind of inherit the alliance that of Matt's alliance with Tarzan and Jackie there with her as a gift. Obviously, we see Matt struggling on the other side without that. Then to have Sean, her real life friend who comes with Lee, like that's already a majority of five. Then you've inherited this half relationship with Dave. Mm-hmm. Like that's a lot of power. And I still don't love the way that she managed it. Like, I think it could have gone better. Like she still, I think of the three plans, did the best here. I think
no one did perfectly, for sure. Yeah. Everyone had some room for improvement after the way that vote went. And obviously it was harder for some of them than others, but And I guess in the end it all worked out. She got her way, but then of course the twist came up.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that later, I'm sure.
Yeah. Again, like, you know, there was a lot of things wrong. If any vote didn't deserve like a perfect vote out, and for someone to come back, it was like almost this vote, because it's like, look, none of you achieved it perfectly, so no one's going home until you kind of sort out what the hell you're doing. We're sending you back to camp. No one's going
home. Figure it out.
In terms of Phoebe and Nick, to kind of look at the third little pillar of this vote. I've spoken at length about Phoebe and Dave. So they seem to think that they have Dave, Lee, and Sean. That's the five they kind of think they have. And I have one issue with what they've done, it's, well, Phoebe misreading that Dave is going to actively vote with them when he's going for Nick. And I think for Nick, it's probably underestimating the real life friendship. I think that, you know, they're asking Sean to vote for Mo. I don't know if that's something that Sean would be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the whole Sean Mo thing, like we said at the start, is just a bigger deal than probably some people out there realized. And it is tricky that, I guess, the issue for Nick and Phoebe is like, if you don't include Sean, then by extension, I guess, I don't know if you can include Lee, and then where do your numbers come from?
Well, like, then I think the thing is you can't vote for Mo. Like, is Sean more willing to do it? Like, is Sean voting against Mo's group at all? Because if not, they actually are screwed. Because then otherwise, you know, all you can do is, like, take out a Zach who Dave is working with. Like, there's almost too many connections. If Sean is willing to part with Mo's ally, a Tarzan or a Jackie, then you take
that
shot.
Well, that is an interesting point. I think maybe it was just a throwaway remark sort of at the start of the post-challenge pre-tribal segment for this tribe. But yeah, I remember someone saying something on the lines of, they're just like, oh, it would have been cool to go Jackie. Yeah. Which... is another interesting wrinkle. Was she potentially going to go if she hadn't won immunity that day? That would have been really interesting to find out for sure.
Jackie had immunity, totally something I remembered about this vote. So that's an interesting one. If Jackie's willing, if Shard is willing, because Shard's been, let's talk about Shard, because Shard has been so on the fence in the middle throughout this whole season. I saw the confessional count. I was shocked at how little she's had, because I feel like she's kind of been in the middle of everything. So if Shard is willing to part with Mo's ally, a Jackie who she maybe doesn't have as much of a relationship with, you know, okay, the day Phoebe thing will still be a problem, but they, but Nick and Phoebe may have more power. But at the point where, like, but then they could have gone for Tarzan, so I don't know.
Yeah, they could have gone for Tarzan, but I guess it's so tricky to know what drives all these decisions. And obviously, at the start, we got a whole lot of challenge strength stuff coming into every vote, which is fine because these challenges are very strength based. But I get, I'm hoping that we might have turned this corner by now. And that they, we are seeing a bit more diversity in challenge types, and maybe a strong person like Tarzan is still someone they want to keep around just in case they have more of these one-on-one pushing, shoving, tugging, whatever challenges. I know that keeping people for challenges is not as exciting as more social dynamics, but at the same time, it is still a big deal when you're out there. You don't want to go back to tribal, and sometimes maybe someone like Tarzan does get a bit of a pass for that reason.
Well, yeah, I mean, you want strength ideally, but if it's literally the difference between Shan voting with you or not, then you have to sacrifice it. But again, I don't know, is Shan voting against Mo's ally when they're friends? Or is it just like she won't vote against that whole group? I think that's what's really difficult about it.
Yeah,
like,
it is tricky because also people maybe don't appreciate Mo's sort of position. Like if Mo really does have Jackie and Tarzan in her pocket, that's like a three. And in a tribe of nine, a three is quite powerful.
That's what I'm saying.
You need more to get a majority. Yeah, so,
so much
maybe
power.
It's an maybe it's just an appreciation of who's doing what. I don't know. Like, we're obviously being shown that Mo is the leader of the three, but Jackie and Tarzan aren't just standing idly by, I hope. They would also be doing things, having conversations. So maybe it's not as clear-cut at camp as it is for us back at home.
Yeah. Yeah, like, yeah, we don't know, like, the individual relationships outside of these blocks. This is something Abby talked about with me on the exit interview. It was like, it wasn't just strength versus rascals, but they have to kind of show a narrative. So I think that's what makes it quite difficult. But, like, in terms of Shan, like, I think that's what's hard for Shan, is that she's kind of got a foot in every camp and did back on the original Makuta. And I'm so impressed that it's not coming back to her, because it's, like, a little snaky that she's in every group. Like, I feel like her relationship with Nick is personified in that last vote, which is, like, she didn't vote for Nick, but she also was, like, not voting with Nick, which was, like,
with
the
Nick,
reason that his, you know, his voting block lost out. So it's the kind of thing where it's, like, she's somewhat helpful to him, but, like, also the flimsiest of allies. And I keep going back to that, like, Michelle versus Sean vote, and, like, he stuck his neck out for her, and since then she, like, is the reason the shot, like, Shawnee got sent to exile because she pulled out of the plan, and is now, like, she did protect him, which is good, but, like, and, you know, if Mo's wanting to work with Nick, I'm sure Sean is a big part of that, but, like, she also betrayed him, and I'm like, you know what, maybe Nick should have just cut Sean, because I don't know, like, it's almost, like, at least, like, if you have an enemy, you know where you stand with them, like, and I genuinely don't know where, like, Nick and Sean stand with each other.
Yeah, the tricky thing is, if you're an ally with everyone, then eventually you're going to have to burn someone.
Yeah, and she did. But that's the thing, is she was in three plans, so she burned two of them. So that's more plans that she stuck with.
But I guess it's her sort of social play when she comes back. Like, she somehow manages to get back in everyone's good graces again.
Yeah.
Like, it's a tricky thing, and she's obviously managing it so well that we're not even really seeing it. Like, it mustn't be terribly dynamic or exciting. So, yeah, I don't know how she's doing it. But she's somehow managing to sort of sit in just the right spot where no one wants to explicitly vote her out at this point, but she's also knowing what's going on. So kudos to her for being in that spot. If she can stay there for a while, then maybe she'll go further.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of criticism of the players that felt too rigid. Like, you know, and again, Abby really kind of, like, went against what the edits, you know, did. You know, in my ex interview, she said it wasn't really like that. But people were like, oh, you know, it makes you seem way too rigid, and people aren't going to want to work with you when you're, like, that unmoving. And Sean is, like, the complete opposite with that, where it's, like, I don't know where she stands at all. I would guess with Mo, but, you know, she was approached by everyone.
And this is why, like, I want to see confessionals from Sean. I want to see her perspective in isolation, not through her conversations with other people, and see what she's really thinking at any given moment, because it is tough to know where she stands in this group in these sort of three blocks. Also, Lee isn't exactly a passenger by any means either. He's agency. He's what he's doing. Like, it seems like Sean and Lee want to stay together with whatever they do, but Lee also has relationships with these people. Like, him and Nick have somehow reconnected after coming into the game on odd turns, which has been lovely to see, because that was an interesting dynamic that could have blown up potentially, but with time on the beach, they've managed to work through it, so that's great. And then, like, how does Lee feel about Mo? Like, how does Lee feel about Dave? Every pairing, like I said before, has an interesting wrinkle to it, and we can only see so many of them in the time that we've got, even with such long episodes for Australian Survivor.
Yeah, I mean, I love Lee this season. That's been one of the most unexpected things for me. I said I compared him last week to Keith Nail, and now, like, someone suggested to me that this is a reference that you'll get when you get through a US binge, but he's kind of like Colby Donaldson in Heroes versus Villains, doesn't really know what's going on. But I think, like, yes, Sean is leading it, but he has been as in the middle as she is. He's also not getting any heat for that. He'll probably, if heat ever comes on them, Sean will probably be getting it. So he's probably in an even better spot while working with everyone, which is really cool. And I just, like, I love his social media presence. I don't know if you saw.
His social media presence is absolutely fantastic. Like, I know that a lot of season one people on their first time around didn't get any social media presence for reasons. So the fact that we can now see this other side of Lee where he's making these brilliant posts is genuinely good to see.
Yes, like, okay, so Nick posted his notebook from before he went out to kind of explain how he crushed that first puzzle. And it had, like, all of these puzzle calculations and formulas and pieces and everything, and it was crazy. And then Lee posted his notebook from before he went out, and it was just, like, a blank notebook.
It's an empty notebook.
I love Lee on social media. Social media.
I love seeing self-aware Lee. It's fantastic.
He's Colby Donaldson now. Like, this version of Lee is, like, my favorite evolution of like, any of the players, which I wasn't expecting. But in terms of Sean, like, she's gotten so few confessionals. She has felt a part of it because she is realistically a part of it. You cannot edit her out. But they've honestly, it seems like they've tried. Like, she's gotten as little content as one could possibly get in this position. And even her confessional.
People have gotten less, but we'll go to that.
Yeah, but she's been so in the middle. Like, she should have some of the most.
For the influence she has, we should be seeing more of her. Because I'm very curious what's running through her head.
Well, even her confessional walking into tribal council is like, what's Mo going to do? It's like, okay, Mo's in a good spot, has the numbers, doing this really complicated plan. That's cool. Sean, you are the one who who's pulled between your friend, your real life friend, who's voting for this other person, who's working with your ally. Like, you're in the most interesting spot. I don't want to hear from you how Mo is doing. Like, tell me how what's happening with you. Like, you're the most interesting part in, like, the middle of this triangle. So, yeah, I think we could hear definitely more from Sean. But I hope that we've kind of broken down, I guess, in like half an hour of talking about it.
I think I think we covered most bases, but again, you could talk about these things for hours. There's just so much to say, but I think we sort of covered all the key blocks and how they're feeling going into each of these votes.
Yeah.
Is it worth thinking about where we think the tribe is at now? Like, obviously they've had a bit of time after this double tribal fire twist mess to come back and talk it through, but where do you feel like they sit currently?
Well, I think that this tribe at its simplest is Phoebe and Nick versus the Mo contingent with Sean and Lee in the middle. Like, if we just, like, so that's, I think, what, like, the vote could have been, but then Dave was just, like, driving a truck through it, and then Mo was splitting votes, and that's how we got our 4-3-2. So I think that if they kind of get Dave on either side, and so it's just those four voting blocks. I think, like, Mo's three, Nick and Phoebe, and then it's, like, Dave coming with Zach, so it looks like Mo's pulling that, and then, like, obviously if she has that, she has a five, so is she, like, I think that Nick and Phoebe and Mo need to pull both of the middle voting blocks, and considering Nick voted out Zach, Phoebe and Dave are not on the same page. Sean, I don't know where she stands, but I put her more with Mo from a friendship perspective. That's where my concern is for
Phoebe that's
and Nick.
An issue, because I think Sean and Lee might be amenable to working with Nick and Phoebe, but they'll want to know who's your majority, like, who's going to be the fifth vote. And like you said, Phoebe and Dave are obviously at odds at the moment. Nick and Zach are definitely at odds. So it's hard, and obviously Mo's contingent, it seems unlikely any of them will flip over. So it's tough to see how Nick and Phoebe can work their way out of this and who they can bring over to actually vote with them.
Yes, I mean, they're definitely not teaming up with Mo. I don't see a voting bloc that can give them that majority. Because even if Lee and Sean choose that over a real life friendship with Mo and Sean, that's still not enough. So that's bad.
It's still not enough.
Unless Mo just randomly starts splitting votes again.
Even an extra vote won't change that, unfortunately, because of the numbers there. You need more than one extra vote to make that work. Because Nick does have that, and that could potentially add an interesting wrinkle. But you almost, if it was a stealer vote, that would obviously make the difference. But as a straight extra vote, it's hard to see how he will manage to pull the majority together.
What are your thoughts on, like, Dave and Mo moving forward? Because considering, like, that relationship is kind of key to a majority. If we don't trust where Sean is going to be, is this something that's workable?
I think so. Like, I guess at the moment it's in both of their best interests to work together. Like, it keeps both of them safe. It allows them to preserve the people they're working with. It could potentially get them both to merge, which is always a good thing, and then they can reevaluate. So it's an interesting dynamic, though, especially with Mo pitching. Did she try and pitch that she wanted to be Dave's Luke? Like, that was an interesting way to phrase it.
Well, I feel like for Mo, I don't love the genesis of this alliance for her. Like, to tell Dave, I want to work with you at the merge, and then say in confessional, like, I said at the merge, we're not at the merge yet. Like, relationships aren't light switches.
That seems like a very much a lawyer sort of loophole. Where you're
can't be mad at me.
Spite them for no reason. Like, if you want to work with me, work with me.
Yeah, like, that's not how relationships work. But, like, again, I think it could work out better for her than maybe what she actually created, based on the fact that, like, where else is David going to go? I think the fact that he has an idol is bad for her, because I think their relationship is purely based from Dave's perspective on desperation. So, like, the more power he has and the less desperate he is, the more tenuous their connection. So that's not good. But otherwise, like, where is Dave really going to go? Like, he needs her.
Yeah, he does. I think he needs to. And it's, even though he has a real idol and a fake idol, let's not forget that that's a thing that he still has in his pocket somewhere. Or so
Dave always has a fake idol. It's always
Dave
somewhere.
Always has a fake idol. I think it's just his thing. Like, he needs it for confidence or something.
Yeah. Like, this is, you know, in terms of, like, saying, did she say she wants to be his Luke? Like, Luke's never done this.
Yeah,
like, Luke's never taken that shot, you know?
In terms of places to have that conversation, at a challenge when everyone else is bored and looking for something to watch is not the time to have that conversation.
Like,
if you're going to have a secret chat with Dave, don't do it there. Because literally, I've been in challenges where it's an individual one and you're first out. You're literally just staring, looking for something to watch. And if you see two people having a chat, you're like, oh, I wonder what they're chatting about. So not the best timing on Mo's part, realistically. But it's... Yeah, and also the pitch was a little weird from my perspective, but if it works, it works.
Yeah, I also think, like, to talk at the challenge, like, it's, like, very urgent as you're about to vote for his ally. Against one of the most vindictive people in the game and maybe in the world. Like, that's...
Yeah, he's very vindictive, as I now know. I'm almost glad I didn't end up trying with him again.
Yeah, you have, like, a cross alliance coming for you with an idol because you voted out Dave when you were on an opposite side to him at the final 10. Wouldn't have known what hit you. Lucky you weren't there, honestly.
I mean, it's Dave's fault. He kept saying we're going to vote out a champion, and then we did, and it was him. So, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, try telling him that. Like, he definitely doesn't really have the analysis of why any of this is on him. Do you have thoughts, like, on the twist itself? There's a lot of twists we're going to give our thoughts on in this podcast.
Oh, well, yeah, we have to work through all the twists. Like, there's a whole smorgasbord of twists and turns. Like, I've got my twisties sitting next to me over here. Mm-hmm. I found a couple
at
of turnips.
At 9 in the morning?
Yeah, absolutely. Twisties and turnips, they're a good combination. I've even found a bar of curly whirly. So.
Okay, I think you're just looking for excuses to eat these snacks. Like, this is not related.
I just love talking about food, as people will realize.
Yes.
But yeah, twists. So many.
The fire twist.
Okay, let's start with the fire twist.
Look.
Okay.
I guess. Like, that's what I literally have written in my notes. It's like, I guess. Like, this is the first time we've had a twist that's not serving a structural purpose. You know, like, usually it's the save an episode, and this actually didn't, which was a blindside in and of itself.
Yeah, it's from a like you said, a sort of inside perspective. You know that, obviously, we need to have a few episodes where no one goes home, and twists are a great way to introduce that. But this twist definitely didn't, like, one person still went home, as Lydia obviously did. So it is interesting from that perspective why we have fire at final 18. Maybe this could be a trend and we'll just do fire at every vote now. Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh my God, don't say that. I I'm anti-fire. Actually, James asked me on Talking Tribal. He's like, how good is fire? And I'm glad like the editor of the episode didn't catch my like panic-stricken face. I ended up like turning the question on its head by being like, it's great that it's not every season like it is in the US. Fire is something that is not that interesting to me. Like, watching two people make fire, it's not exhilarating. What is exhilarating for me is watching someone get themselves to a position where they're making fire at the final four. Like, yes, when Jerry convinces Tara to vote for him, that's what I love. Like, when Aubrey convinces Ty through emotional means to vote with her. These are the things that's interesting. Like, that's the strategy of getting yourself into a position where you could save yourself. And then I'm interested in whether you can save yourself. So that's interesting.
Yeah, and
to
then
me.
I
Force
guess
fire
that's
is
a
like,
social thing, right? That's not that's
yeah,
not
exactly.
a challenge thing. That,
exactly.
that you're admiring the social play and the results that gives us a challenge, not admiring the challenge itself.
Yes, exactly. Like, that's why. But then I'm interested in the fire making. Like, once someone has gotten themselves at that position through their strategy, then I'm interested to see how they go. When it's like forced, it's kind of like the challenges to me. Like, it's interesting, but it's not why I'm watching the show. But results orientated, like, I didn't hate this because I do feel that Makuta is so much more interesting than Vakama. They also seem way stronger than Vakama. And I wonder if we just would have had like a pure Vakama Pagongi this week, which I think would have been pretty boring. And the Makuta thing really added some like pizzazz.
It did add added a lot of pizzazz. Like I said, I know you love plurality votes, and
yes,
we definitely got one of those.
Yes.
So it is really interesting that we did get that the way it came out.
Yeah.
And I guess the other interesting part is that when you find out that both tribes are going to go to tribal at the same time, like in my mind, suddenly that's setting off alarms, like something is up. And I know that we just had the whole exile twist literally the episode before, but we can't have two people go home. Like, if we have two people go home, then we have another non-elimination twist, like more than we need. And like, there's already enough of those. So, it's just so complicated in that regard of why you would end up at this point. So in my mind, you know that there's going to be some sort of further twist coming because there's no way two people are going home. And that would potentially almost encourage a safe vote.
I mean,
if you know that there's something unknown still to be revealed, the last thing you want to do is cause a big upset, because then the unknown part could come and bite you on the ass, as Mo found out the hard way.
Although cut to Makuta then with their 4-3-2.
Yeah, exactly. I think on the Vakama side, potentially there was that logic was running through their heads of, we don't want to rock the boat on this boat because something weird is happening.
Yeah, and that's so fair. And there's definitely some like major fans in there, your AKs and your Harriers, who would definitely be
Lydia
kept saying, Lydia's whole strategy to them was basically like, this is all stars. And it's like, yeah, it's all stars on a double vote. This is not the time to kind of like
this
cause
is,
an earthquake.
No. Also, this is all stars. Let's vote out the weak player.
Yeah, I think that like, it's interesting to send them back to their tribe because like that's uncomfortable, and kind of watching Phoebe at the auction and stuff showed that.
It's tough for Phoebe because she has now come back into a tribe that she's just been voted out of, and she's obviously going to struggle moving forward, like we've talked about, to cobble together a new majority. But if she had, for example, been able to choose which tribe she went back onto, or if she'd just literally just gone to Vakama, that would have been an amazing result for her, because on Vakama, she can connect up again with Lockie and Brooke and Flick and AK and feel in a much better spot.
Although,
so it's
I don't think that's what they usually do. They usually swap you. I don't think that you should be rewarded with choosing and, like, even with going to the other tribe for being voted out. Like, that would have been a reward for losing. I think that...
Yes.
Like, this is interesting because, you know, now she has to, like, go back to a tribe that voted her out, which is, like, kind of interesting from a social perspective. She has to now find a way out. So she's got a lifeline, but it's a really difficult lifeline, which is interesting. I do think, like, the problem narratively is that a lot of the time, like, they'll probably just have the exact same vote. Like, if Lydia had come back and they go back the next night, aren't they just definitely doing the exact same vote the next night?
Yeah.
I think that the producers lucked out that there's no way this 4-3-2 is being recreated, and, like, Phoebe's in trouble, but definitely the alliances just have shifted, and it was so complicated that it's going to be different, because otherwise, yeah, watching the same vote happen two nights in a row isn't like riveting television.
No, having been there, it's not riveting.
Yeah, he literally did it with Simon Black. People forget, but it's something that happens. So
yes. It is tricky. You're right. I think one of the themes from this week almost has been, oh, you were voted out. No, you're not. You're back. So yeah. that ties into that nicely. But I agree that being voted out should be a punishment. Like you've had the most people in your tribe say that you don't deserve to be here. And that shouldn't be a good thing.
Yes, Phoebe did say she had the most, but it was actually a plurality. But Tarzan seemed split, so then she did have the most. This vote was very confusing.
Yes, there's a lot of wrinkles to it, as we've seen through extensively.
Basically, so, yes, she did. Most people don't want her there.
But back to the twist itself, it's interesting timing. It's also just interesting in general. I don't know if I'm a fan of it overall. Like, it just feels a little weird.
Yeah.
And I can't put my finger on exactly what the issue with it is. I like that it gave us that sort of... I know Fires obviously has its problems, but it also did give a moment of excitement for maybe the more casual viewers who do like that sort of thing. So maybe it's tough to know.
Yeah, well, my issue with it is, like, twists are, like, a necessary evil. From a structure perspective, like, don't just throw in more twists for the sake of it because we already have more than we'd like. In general, like, objectively, I didn't love it. But just, like, I liked it this week. Like, I like that we've spent 45 minutes talking about a vote that otherwise might have never happened. Otherwise, we get the most monotonous Vakumo Pagonging week. Like, it worked out.
Yeah, that is
but,
true. It did work out for us to talk about all this crazy stuff. But at the same time, like, this is All-Stars. Did I say that right? you need to rely on the All-Stars that you've put on this show to create exciting drama for you. Like, this isn't a tribe of newbies who don't want to play. These people do want to play, and they will create the excitement that you're looking for if you give them the chance to before you shove a twist in their face.
Yeah, I do like where they're kind of putting the twist. I know they've been really close together, and again, like, we'll talk about a different twist right after this section of the podcast, but at least it's, like, early on, at least they tell them before. It has to be that that's what they have to do every time. And
they tell them before, but, like, how long before? Like, right. we're within tribal, probably towards the end of the tribal. Like, there's not a lot of time to completely upturn the plan if you decide that the twist isn't worth it. Do you know what I mean?
Like, that is true.
I feel like you obviously can't be completely honest because then people would just send their best fire makers into this fire making challenge and hope that they win.
I don't think they would actually do that. Like, even if they had time, like, in a very cohesive tribe, yes, but, like, in neither of these tribes,
they're
fractured enough.
That's a good point.
I think that,
like, yeah, no, that's fair.
More time, the better, I agree.
But there's a risk that happens. There's a risk that happens for sure.
Like, yeah, I mean, give them time, tell them after the challenge or whatever. Like, if you're going to do these twists, let's see how people strategize around the twist rather than just being blind.
Yeah, tell them at the challenge. At the challenge, tell them two people are being voted out. They both make you fire. I want to go home. And then let them figure out what they want to do with that.
They just want the TV moment of Jonathan being like, not so fast. But, like,
one more thing.
Everyone hates that. Like, everyone hates that moment. So
as a contestant, hate it. You just, like,
as a fan, hate
exactly
it. You know?
Like, I think some fans do like to see shocked reactions and whatever, which is fine. That's their prerogative. But, like, as a contestant, definitely, you're just like, stop, enough things. Was it Sophie who said that?
Yeah.
On the ad for the Winners of War or something like that.
Yeah,
but yes.
In the episode.
Stop, like, enough things. I think that sort of captures the essence of what I would be thinking in that moment.
Yeah, I mean, but as a fan, like, less so this, more so, like, last week's Exile thing, I do think fans...
Oh, what, yes.
It's not
yes,
about the shocked twist. Reactions. It's more like, oh, so this is a waste of time. Like, I think that's what... That's not, like, an announcement, like, a surprise that everyone's enjoying. Whereas, like, if you tell them at the challenge, maybe it seems a little bit more baked into the format of the episode so it has relevancy. Like, yes, it's a non-elimination episode, but they're strategizing around it so it's actually relevant to, you know, what they're doing rather than being a surprise.
Yeah, exactly. It's just so tricky for the Exile thing because obviously you had your podcast with Josh last week. You were talking about the Exile twist and then we come back and we see, oh, it's just they come back and there seems to be no actual punishment for being voted out. Like we were just saying with Phoebe before, she got voted out and the punishment was going back and trying having to work with her same tribe again. Like yes. That was sort of the problem for her. Whereas it feels like Shawnee and Zach got a one-night holiday and they just got swapped in anyway. Everyone takes swaps, so, like, getting swapped isn't a detriment to them. It's just they get the same treatment as everyone else. So there was no real downside to being voted out. Like, obviously, Zach being there as the second highest vote getter in that vote, you could argue that he shouldn't have been there in the first place. And so him not really being punished. Yeah, and we did, which you did.
Which
and
is
so
negated really... now completely, but now I have another gripe with the show.
But, like, him not being punished for that, I guess, is fine. But for Shawnee, she did have the most votes against her. And because of that, she should be feeling some sort of detriment for that happening.
Yeah.
And that hasn't really happened. In fact, anything, it's probably worked out better for her.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has. Look, I like, if there's going to be non-elimination twist, and again, I want them to do it when it's structurally necessary, not just throwing them in. But I do like that they're here and they're early, because it does kind of correct is maybe the wrong word, but it balances out some imbalances in the game, which are a part of the game, maybe too much a part of the game in something like Australian Survivor. Mm. But, you know, the fact that it's so physically based and someone like Shawnee is a little screwed, she does get saved here, and that is an asterisk. But, like, again... she was screwed from the get-go being in a tribe of athletes, which is what they cast, in an incredibly strength-based game. And, you know, they went to a lot of tribal councils and stuff. Like, I don't hugely blame her for getting voted out. She does get saved. She does have the asterisks. But again, at least it's correcting, like, not just, like, late in the game where you've screwed yourself and, oh, you're getting voted out because of something you've hugely done. At this stage of the game, it is more likely to just be, like, you are weaker, which is something she can't control. So at least it's saving that. Same thing with, like, having... a twist like the fire right after a swap. It's like Phoebe kind of swap screwed. Lydia kind of swap screwed. At least it's giving a chance to people who kind of just are in a bad situation. So timing wise, I don't hate that. But the Exile twist was objectively completely insane. Like, you know, Exile has been a battle the last couple of seasons. So that's how I was thinking about it when it happened. They did swap Annalise and Tara over to, you know, they went to Exile and then they went to the other tribe. But that at least was still like, I guess, a punishment of sorts, because at least you're, like, in a different tribe, and how will you kind of work your way in?
Yeah, you've been swapped into a huge minority position, and also that was over two votes. So both Tara and Annalise were the highest vote-getters.
Yeah.
So that's always a better to see. But, yeah, they were still punished for being voted out, and that they have to work through a minority position to get back into a sensible position in the game. Whereas it's just like, oh, Shawnee's been voted out, and now she's just being swapped like everyone else.
Oh, they just were 5 minutes late to the tribe swap. Like... what was that? Was so bizarre.
And not only were they 5 minutes late to the tribe swap, they were just given their buffs. Like, they didn't pull them out of bag or anything, which is also curious.
So I did see, like, a lot of people have said this. Even I was like, what? It did look like producers were kind of putting people in tribes for their benefit. Put Zach with Nick, put Shawnee with Abby. It does seem like it was by gender, though. Like, I have to give the show credit.
I think it was potentially by gender, but at that point there was 19 people in the game.
So there was 19 people in the game. So Zach went to a tribe. So
they were never going to get mirrored tribes out of this. So that's always just like another thing to think about. But I guess if you had put Zach, if you had done it that way around and put Zach on Vakama and Shawnee on Makuta, then it would have been six guys on one of the tribes, I think. So I guess
Vakama would have had six.
It was
guys,
more
four
balanced
girls
by gender doing it this way.
Definitely, like, the trays they would have picked from would have been gender-based, like they always are.
Always.
This was definitely, like, a gender-based thing. It just looked really icky, and they definitely should have explained it to the audience.
Get Jonathan to say that or something. Like, it seems weird that they hide away the fact that they're gender-matching these tribes at the swap. Like, but it's a necessary evil to make the challenges fairer.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, it's not a new thing that they're doing this for swaps. I just think they definitely should have been, like... Well, if anything, they could have just given... Like, they, you know, they could have given Zach and Shawnee their buffs before the swap. Been like, you're on, you know, Vakama, you're on Makuta. Who else is getting swapped with them? And then it wouldn't have seemed like, I mean, considering that they had a male and female buff coming from Exile that were definitely going to be Makuta and definitely going to be Vakama, they could have done that.
Counterpoint. What if two people of the same gender had been voted out?
Yeah, I also wondered that. What would they have done?
Because, like, what would they do then? Would it just be, oh, you go to this one, you go to that one? Like, there's no argument for
I like to think they would have just made them actually choose a buff. Like,
I would like to think that as well.
Yeah, we all like to think things. put our faith in the show. There are things they could have done with this. Like, what if they... Well, I don't know. People have said, like, they could have been tribe captains for getting voted out, but then again, your advantage.
No, not tribe captains. They deserve. They've been voted out. They can't have extra power for that.
They probably just should have had done it at a different time and just swapped them to a different beach like they did with Tara and Annalise. Like, at least it is a disadvantage.
Yeah, maybe they should have had a one-on-one challenge to determine... No. Maybe one-on-one challenge between Shawnee and Zach, and the winner gets to pick which one they go to, or is that still too much power?
So the problem with a one-on-one challenge is it wouldn't have saved an episode. Like, if they do an exile challenge at the swap, then obviously... Like, one person goes home then, and then...
Sorry. A one-on-one challenge to determine... The winner of the one-on-one challenge determines which tribe they go on to.
This is so much time for, like, such a ridiculous... Like, I guess, like, it's... Yes, but, like, at least that has some... But, like, another challenge just to do another thing. Like,
I know, but at least it has a rope pull right there. Like, they could have done that, but at the same time, that might have been a very one-sided contest. So, I don't know. Surely, I'm not a producer by any means. I'm not someone who thinks about how to make these twists ideal, but there's surely some way to make this slightly more sensible, I guess. It's just a tricky thing to work these elimination episodes into the season without it disrupting the flow of the season.
I think they need to have other marquee things that aren't Tribal Council. Like, that's for me what it is. Like, if they had all swapped and Shawnee and Zach, I mean, firstly, don't vote out Zach by the second most votes. Have them go back. They vote twice, Tara and Annalise style. That rant still stands, even if it was pointless. A lot of things were pointless. But, you know, do that. Send them to exile. Have the tribe swap, see those dynamics, and then have Zach and Shawnee come in and have their exile battle at the end of the episode instead of Tribal Council, and then one person goes home that episode. Like, that's what I think I would be moving to. Something they did more in season one, which is just like a swap or a merge or a family visit or an exile battle like this or something else. You know, primarily they haven't had any short episodes this season. Usually they do. But if it's a bit of a shorter episode,
but with the long ones.
They're also long, very long episodes. But I do think that if they just have other events rather than it having to be tribal every time, because it, you know, it really does bastardize the vote. It's going to happen, but if they could lessen that, I think that's what I'm looking for, especially like in pre-merge, just kind of have other big events. And like, you know what, if you want Tribal Council, it's coming around again tomorrow. There's a lot of episodes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can handle one episode without a Tribal Council, surely. I guess the only sort of upside of all these twists being front loaded is that they're not post-merge.
Yes. But again, like, we didn't even save an episode.
If any part of the game is going to be pure social maneuvering and strategy, I prefer it to be the post-merge period rather than the pre-merge period.
Completely agree, but we still have one to go. So are we getting another...
Oh, boy.
Yeah, like, are we getting another... And this is now all bets are off. Now they do twists when they don't even need to. So who knows how many more we're getting.
Yeah.
Are they doing this, like, within the next couple of weeks, because it's going to feel like a lot, but I would rather that than have it, you know, go into that final seven vote like you guys had.
But like, we're only sort of another week and maybe a bit more away from merge. Like, if we're merging somewhere at 12, 13 ish, then merge isn't really too far away. So
Yeah, they do. Yeah, but at least it won't be post-swap.
At least it won't be, unless I'm hoping we won't see two major twists in 1 week again.
Yes, in the space of two episodes. Well, that twist does get us to Vakama, which I'm calling Vakama because it's like, who's driving the Vakama?
Yes, who's driving the futuristic tribe? That is the driverless tribe.
The driverless tribe. Yeah, like, you know, this is where a lot of your season four people do meet their end. Look, Abby.
Yes.
The online reaction to Abby, something I spoke about last week, something that got somehow worse this week. Poor Abby.
It sucks because Abby is genuinely such a good player. Like, she didn't come fifth for nothing. She knows what she's doing. She has she's a fantastic presence around camp. She can talk to you like a real person. She knows what to say at the right moment to sort of get you. Like, it's just, she's way, way more than just, we need to keep all the strong people here. Like, there's so much more to her than that. And it just sucks that the edit has decided to highlight the strong people versus the rascals dynamic to the point of making her the sort of flag bearer for the strong people.
Yeah. I mean, and Nick has said on Instagram, and she said in her ex interview, that like, it really was not that divided. Like, Daisy said that the two groups on original Vakama, I'm now getting confused, that they really were divided. Whereas Makuta, from what sounds like both sides of the aisle, did not feel that way.
No, I think there was a lot more fluidity. It wasn't two rigid alliances like it was in the original Vakama.
Yeah, completely. And I think that, you know, obviously they needed a narrative, which was very much us versus them. Like, look, the Abby thing, it's kind of like, you know, she's kind of like a bit of an Andrew Savage. She's a leader type. She's like this, you know, strong player leading a group. But when Andrew Savage did it, he did it twice and kind of had the same failings, which was like frustrating to watch because that's like the definition of insanity. Whereas, you know, for Abby, at least she was like really actively trying to change up gameplay that had failed for her 2 months before. Like, you can totally see that thinking. And
yeah, especially given the time frame. Like, it is such a quick turnaround, and she's obviously had to reassess, okay, I made it to fifth. What went wrong? And it was that she was perceived as the best challenge doer by the majority of the tribe when she left the game.
She also is just not someone who wins Australian Survivor because the social threats did it. So, you know, and she said in her ex interview, like, and Lydia said the same, that, like, taking out Shawnee was a compliment, you know, like, that she's, like, the peer type who's that good socially, be sought in action this week, especially at this vote. And they don't feel that that's their game. So they're trying to take that out.
Yeah, it works for them. It absolutely works for them. Like, I'm sure Abby would rather be in a final five with people who were closer to her in perceived physicality than people like she ended up with in her first season round. And that's totally a valid strategy, and it suits her play style. So good on her for pushing that strategy.
Yeah, I know that I was kind of like a lightning rod for this because I was defending Abby so much. So I got a lot of the response, and I'm kind of taking a step back from Twitter at the moment because it was a lot. But I do feel like, you know, at best, she was a really good player who got screwed. At worst, her game had some serious flaws that made her the obvious target and leader. It's probably both things. It's probably somewhere in the middle of that. I don't think she's the best player ever. I don't think she was terrible by any means. Like, it's not that complicated, but the response that I've seen to her is, like, having to dig in on why she was terrible. And I just don't agree. Like, if you looked at AK, who got screwed and all the superfans were devastated in 2017, when he voted out Tara, his vote meant nothing. Tara went to the other tribe, told everyone the hierarchy, and he got swap screwed and voted out. Then, like, if you were mad about that, but you think that
you should be mad about this.
It's not even being mad about it, because I get that it's way more palatable when Shawnee's doing it to Abby than when Tara's doing it to AK. But, like, not even, like, personal preference. Like, if you're strategically putting way more of the onus on Abby, maybe look into why. Like, maybe that's a personal bias by the fact that you just liked AK more, you know? Like, just not even taking away, like, if you like her or not. Like, I just think strategically, yes, she could have not been the leader, but again, her whole alliance was taken out this week, so she might have bought herself a few days if, like, Lydia was more out in front, but it wasn't going well for her. She was in a bad spot. She got swap screwed. She got twist screwed. It was a bad circumstance. Like, I don't know why everyone is so, like, again, I was in the center of it defending her, but everyone just seems very, very preoccupied with drilling down on, like,
every way that Abby didn't play correctly. Yeah, like, she did play her game well, and it just was unfortunate that she got swapped onto a tribe without the people that she'd been working with before swap, which obviously always happens to someone, unfortunately, and it just happened to be her this time around.
Yeah.
And you could argue that she got twist screwed as well, but, like, I feel like even if Shawnee wasn't there, the numbers were still stacked against her in quite a strong way. So even that, like, is just, she got stuck with Lydia and John and practically no one else that she was working with.
Yeah. And, like, this is the way that it goes. Like, she is the leader and Lockie was the leader and he got swapped, like, to a majority and he's doing great.
Speaking of driverless cars and futuristic cars, we had a very similar discussion in season 4 about who's driving the car when and all that sort of stuff. I made an extended analogy about getting into the driver's seat at the right time. You don't want to be in the driver's seat too early or else you get chucked out. That led to a long discussion from Harry about the difference between a passenger in the car and the navigator in the car. Like, car analogies are very, very apt for Survivor, apparently.
Yes, definitely. I think that you guys, like, every analogy has probably been used in Survivor at this point. I just feel bad for Abby. Like, I feel like for Abby, it's so bad because the superfans hate her because she's against Shawnee. The casuals, I haven't gone to the Facebook page, but from what I hear, hate her because I assume she's, like, a loud, vocal, leadership-style woman. Where are her fans? Like, where are the, like, Abby? Like, I will lead that fan club because I just feel like she got way too much flack for, like, a very solid game that was marred by a lot of other circumstantial things. But if I do think she made, like, anything, I wouldn't have saved her, but I am a bit shocked that she was so blindsided because, like, she should have known getting into that swap that it was done. Like, she's the leader of Makuta. She's on a Vakama tribe with a Vakama majority with Shawnee.
Yep.
Like, why, you know, it's true. Like, you know, physical strength is not a thing. Like, these challenges are hard, but at the same time, you're the leader of Makuta. Like, they're definitely taking you out. So I'm surprised that they were that blindsided.
Yeah. It's just unfortunate the way that it all worked out. I guess the one thing is that, like, being the leader pre-swap is particularly dangerous, because when the swap happens, everyone goes, oh, I'll take out the leader of the other side. So,
yeah.
And I know that someone has to be perceived as the leader, and it's just it ended up being her this time, but it still sucks because she is a genuinely really good player, way, way better than we got to see this season particularly. So, yeah, I'm glad she got to go again. I'm glad she got to live out the dream of playing being an all-star, but at the same time, it's like, it's just the swap does that, and that's just the nature of the game.
But in terms of her being a leader, like, she did seem like almost the most fluid from what we saw. Like, she's the one who voted for Henry, reached across
the
aisle.
She voted for Henry, exactly. Yeah. Like, she was the aisle crosser before the swap, voting Henry out. Like, she obviously was thinking on a higher level than some of the others even. So maybe that's another reason she was taken out. I don't know. Like, we've obviously got her as being the leader of the athletes, but maybe she was also the one who was most, I don't know, had the most sort of social or strategic nous. Like, it's,
she definitely
I don't know.
Did. I mean, like, look, like, who's going to be the leader of that group? Like, Sean's the most strategic, but she's got, like, one foot out the door, as Sean does this season. Who else is it going to be? Who's leading this tribe, this alliance strategically? Is it Lydia? Lee? Is it
John?
Like, no. So Abby was, like, it just kind of was, like, probably a natural fit. That's what she was going to do.
Yeah, sometimes you fall into that leadership role, and sometimes it's just the personalities that you're with. Like, in the first time around, like, it just, on the Contenders Tribe ended up, and it just, Sean seemed to fit that natural leadership role very well, just because of his personality and who he is. So sometimes you just fall into that role, and even if you don't want it, you sort of, it's forced upon you.
I always say that. It's like, you got to be who you are as a person.
Yeah, you can't be... It's so tough to be someone else out there. Like, you can try your hardest, and it, sometimes people can pull it off, but there's just so much downtime to talk about yourself as a person, and to put on that act 24/7 for weeks is incredibly tough.
It's also just the chemistry of the tribe. Like, Abby wasn't really a leader when it came to the champions, and she had, like, Janine. Like, obviously Janine's going to be the leader, but, like, just this group of people, Abby's the leader. I don't know who could have taken that role other than her. And everyone obviously tries to not take that role, but...
That's the other thing. People are very reluctant to take that role so early on. Like, maybe someone like Lee could have taken it if he felt like he wanted to, but he obviously didn't.
Not this new version of Lee. Not cold blooded person. Like,
not this left out of the vote Lee. Or that's not told of the change of plan and votes for Michelle when no one else does Lee.
Yeah, not this Lee. Yeah, I mean, they were very blindsided. That's the worst part, is having just, like, the wool pulled over their eyes. Like, to the point where John voted for Matt. So it's rare to see... Both sides think they have such a large majority that they both split the vote. I kind of love dual split votes. That's a blind side.
Yeah, that ends up making a very messy vote count, which is always great. But it felt like both sides felt they had the Brooke, Flick, Lockie and AK sort of grouping of four, because they seemed like the largest dominant faction in that tribe. I think that's correct.
Yeah, that's a little crazy for me. Like, that's a lot of swing votes.
Yeah, like, the fact that all four of them had convinced both sides that they were working with them, and then that's good social on their side to actually make that convincing happen.
Yeah, I mean, to kind of move down with this continued pogonging, like, Lydia going home, I did kind of rail on her and talking tribal for her, the baggage she brought in. She said to me on the exit interview that there wasn't that much baggage, and Shane just was, like, a perfect first boot, which is totally fair. And
which Matt, is completely understandable.
Yeah, and Matt, like, you know, wouldn't have given them the majority anyway, and he went with the numbers. So she says that it would have been a very workable option. Is there anything Lydia could have done?
After Abby went, I kind of doubt it. Maybe push for the going for Matt early. Mm. Oh, no, wait. I feel like by the time Abby left, there's not much she could do.
And as you said, the fact that they know it's a
like,
double
honestly,
tribal council makes it
even
more...
Want to go down the, people like AK just want to go down the line on such a weird vote out, so it's tough for her. The play might have been to just go for Matt straight away.
Yeah.
As soon as the swap happened, instead of trying to do this double split vote mess, maybe try and just go, look, we need to flush the idol and hope that he doesn't figure it out.
Well, they were just that blindsided, I guess.
True. Yeah. They thought they had to split vote, so they obviously didn't. So it's tough.
Even if Matt does go first, you know, he obviously does have an idol. He has a very good read on when to play the idol. And
after last time, you really got to say that?
Well, this season he genuinely does. Like, I mean, I'm so impressed.
This season he does. Yeah. This season he's doing better. He's better.
I understand now. That sounded like a dig. Yes. He has improved that so much. Like, obviously he had the intel to play for Daisy, but I'm so impressed this week that, you know, Flickr said that she's working with him and telling him when to play it. She said that online, definitely not in the show. Even then, like, is he trusting Flick? Like, it's his on his reads of who to trust, of when to play it, to know not to play it the first two times when you're in this terrible swap position, no allies. Lockie is your, you know, main, the main person leading the tribe, and he's your enemy. So he's I really loved his reads. I really love that he only needed his idol at that third tribal council. And also he's probably helped by the fact that they want to kind of get a bit of stability with a swap, like really take that majority, then kind of maintain that stability at a tricky double tribal council. He's definitely helped by that, and I definitely think that they kind of did the right thing there. Like, look, the Valkomar majority are playing with house money on this tribe. I feel like they have so many allies. They have so many people at the bottom. Even though Matt has an idol, they have the numbers to split on him, that, you know, in the last vote of the week. So it's they've done well, but they are doing it easy. But I am impressed that Matt has, like, just, like, you know, hid and made it through this whole week.
Yeah, he hid for two votes and then played his idol correctly. It's good for him to manage to do that. So kudos to him for reading that right. But it is interesting that third. Oh, we'll get to the John vote in a minute, I guess. But yeah, Abby and Lydia. It's just unfortunate. Again, like the swap, sometimes you just end up on the bottom at the swap and there's not enough time or will to do anything about it.
Yeah. And it's especially, yeah, the swap that's so twisty, you know, like a swap in the middle of
an Excel swap.
Yeah, like a swap in the middle of two twists, literally slap bang in the middle, where you have someone coming back in the game that you just voted out, and then for Lydia to have a vote that is tricky. Like, yeah, I mean, it's like the chaos when you don't need it, and it's the need for stability when you also don't need it. It was just not a great vibe for him. And I do think that kind of maybe sped up a begonging, because Matt is obviously a huge threat. There's always an argument to take him out, but you can totally see why they didn't. To move to the John vote especially, well, I mean, here's where Matt's trying to make a real majority, and I've seen some hate online, not super on Twitter. I think this might be more of an Instagram, Facebook thing, but like for Flick and Shawnee and Harry not to flip, do you like that move?
This is a bit of a weird tribal, again, complicated by stuff that didn't make the edit. I think if you check out, I think Harry's post on Instagram, what his perception of the episode was, particularly how apparently there was a plan at some point to vote out Brooke, which would have been a crazy move with Harry and Flick trying to get the one up on Brooke before the whole Brooke Flick stuff potentially ignites. So that would have been a very sort of something on everyone's minds coming into that tribal. So I guess the fact that that had happened and Harry and Flick potentially felt like that they'd been rumbled somewhat in their plan to take out Brooke, maybe they just thought it was safer to go down the line and stick with the majority they had for now instead of flipping over.
Yeah, I mean, that does seem to be what's coming out online, that there was this plan, and, like, Flick has, you know, supported that by being like, look, Harry pulled out, so she pulled out. I don't think they should have flipped anyway. Like, I think that this six makes sense. I can see how all of them would feel secure in that six anyway. Like, because if you're Brooke and Lockie, you're obviously on the top, you feel good in your, like, original Valkomar 4. But then, like, if you're Harry and Shawnee, like, should you flip? Like, again, like, Harry and AK seem like the most natural pair to me. Is AK really voting out Harry or Shawnee instead of Brooke and Lockie? Like, that seems crazy to me. So I can kind of see how they would all feel comfortable enough to go down the line. And also, the person that you're teaming up with is literally the godfather. They're on the other side watching Mo Hope, the Matt equivalent, vote against Phoebe, who's with the Lockie-Brooke alliance, and Nick, who is a rascal. So to team up with Matt, it feels like, well, what's going to happen at the merge? Because it feels like you'll just be on the bottom of, you know, Mohawk's alliance is running the other side. Looks like a pretty obvious battle, and you've got to get those wins now while you have them.
Exactly. I feel like Matt is probably, just because of the relationship with Mo and all what's happening on the other tribe, probably not the person you want to keep around coming into merge, because he'll just join up with that and ditch you guys, and then suddenly you're on the bottom again.
Even remotely vulnerable.
Exactly. So, and it's just unfortunate that John was sort of the odd one out in that regard, and that it sort of landed on him, because I'm sure they would have perhaps preferred to get Matt out tonight and hope he didn't play his idol, which Lockie says much.
Yeah. So I was talking about this with my brother last night, and I want to talk about John, because John is someone who should never be voted out. Like, he's got every single quality that should get him to the very end of Australian Survivor. Like, he's obviously not a leader. He's physically helpful, but he's not super physically threatening. He's nice to be around. He's not annoying you. He's not, like, an obvious strategic threat. So it's like, how does John go home? And, like, John is the perennial default boot. Like, it's now happened 2 seasons in a row. He went home in your season because they were like, who can we vote who doesn't have an idol? They went home in this... He went home in this season because... He was just, like, the secondary target. In a world without idols, John, like, never gets voted out. They probably just, like, literally forget he's there. Whereas, like, he's just, like, if he ever plays again, that's going to be my prediction for how he does. It should be John will never get voted out. Why would he get voted out? But it's going to be somehow he will be the default boot again. That is now his role in this.
When you put it that way, it does suck for him for both times. There hasn't really been something he's done per se, that's because he hasn't been the main target that people that actually wanted to get out that night. It's just been the idol has messed things up and he's ended up it falling on him, which is super unfortunate for him, actually, because he's genuinely a really good person to be around and a good social player, like a really good social player, and has his head screwed on enough to know what's going on. Like, I guess a sort of comparison you could make, a recent comparison would be Elaine from Island of the Idols, given that's sort of one of the more recent American seasons I can draw upon. Sort of that's
I think Elaine seemed to have more strategic acumen. And Elaine, I think was John, like, way more of a final tribal council threat. Whereas, like, with John, I don't see any reason he's like that perfect middle person where he's like, he's not threatening enough or deficient enough in anything to get rid of him at, like, any stage of the game. But that's also his fault because he's also, like, the perfect, like, avatar of just this person you can always split votes on, you can always throw votes on. He definitely doesn't have an idol. And that's, like, now his legacy of how he always goes home, perennial default boot.
No, I genuinely feel like he's more switched on than he's ever shown in the edit, which is unfortunate because he is generally, like, thinking and playing. Like, he sometimes has to have the rules explained to him.
Okay, see, that's not an endorsement.
But I still don't know whether he was putting that on or not. So it's tough
to know
for sure.
That's so kind, Baden. It's like a lot of slack given to him.
But he's generally, like, I still reckon he has an awareness of where he is. Like, he's not...
Listen to what you're saying. You're now saying he has an awareness of where he is. This is really damning with faint praise. He knows he is on Survivor. It's a really threatening thing about him.
No, I generally, like, I'm all here for more John Tent overall. Like, I know that he falls in that sort of comic relief role in the edit sometimes, and we got to see his butt again on last night's episode, which is always apparently a good thing to see, according to the editors. So, so it's just, it's, I still maintain that he's, I don't know, like, he knows what he's doing and he knows how he's being perceived in the game and he's using that to his advantage. So it's just unfortunate that the idols just end up meaning he's sort of the other vote in the both times he's left the game.
But he's also, like, never had any way to fight against that. Like, there's, like, you know, it's unfortunate to be the default boot, but I do think, like, other players, there's a reason not everyone is always the default boot. Like, yes, it's circumstance, and it's kind of crazy that it happened twice in a row.
Twice.
But yeah. I do think, like, it's not completely coincidental. Like, John is the default boot. Like, you assume he doesn't have the idol. He actually doesn't have the idol. And, like, is he strategizing his way out of this? No.
No, that's... Okay, fair. But, like, he's still... It's... Just, I guess it's still, unfortunately, you said it is a bit of a pogonging where we've had Abby and Lydia go, and John was sort of the last remnant of that group. So it made sense to just clear them out so that there's no free agents going into merge.
And to John's credit, like, you know, good on him for being that middleman who is the last one who's pogonged. Good on him, like, in your season, you and Daisy and Harry were probably, like, all more threatening than him. And he literally did just go because he was, like, least likely to have an idol and they wouldn't have thought to play the idol on him at all. So he's always in that kind of last spot and it's good to get yourself there, but it has meant, unfortunately, that he has been the default boot twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do think, like, his butt is getting more confessionals than him at this point.
Getting more airtime, clearly.
Getting more airtime than some of these players. Like, quite a couple of these players.
But there's so much time to fit everyone in, right?
What about the idea that Matt could have voted for John. It was a 3-3-2, saved his idol, put a vote.
Ooh, I hadn't thought of that. That is a... Oh, if he was confident that everyone else was voting how he felt, how they ended up voting, then him flipping his vote from... Who did they pick off Lockie? From yeah. Lockie to... Oh, man. Yeah, if he felt confident that the other six were going to do a 3-3 split, then that would have worked in his favor.
Yeah, I mean, but, I think that's a tough... Like, that's what makes it tough. It's, like, looking at it, like, with this, like, bird's eye view.
Yeah, we're here in our own omniscient position. We see all we know all of, almost. And we can go, oh, it's obviously a 3-3 split. Why wouldn't he do that? But when you're there on the island, you just don't know. And you never... You don't want to be the person who... goes home with an idol in their pocket again. That would have been weighing on his mind so much. So I think definitely he made the right decision to not try that next level play. If he'd pulled it off, it would have been great. But there's always the chance that something unexpected happens and it ends up screwing you over.
Yeah, I mean, they could have split 4-2. He obviously didn't know the way they were splitting because he was trying to get a majority of 5 when he wouldn't have necessarily needed 5. So, like,
yeah, and, he wouldn't have needed 5.
And
yeah,
why would he know that?
Like, why would he try and pull Flick in at that point?
Because he doesn't have all the information that we as the viewers have, you know?
We the viewers have, yeah. He's obviously seeing a group of 6 and it's just him and John on the outs and he's gone, well, we need... If they all work together, we need 5 to do them. But everyone knows he has the idol, so he would have felt there's some sort of split coming on, surely.
Yeah. I feel like this boot was pretty much just, like, perfectly boring play from every single person. Like, I totally get the majority of sticking together, as I said. I totally get weakening Matt Rogers while you have him under your thumb, not working with the Godfather, who, if he makes it to the merge, is back in power, maybe more power than he's ever had this season in a big, big way, as his number one ally votes against your allies, as you have complete... reason to believe, whether you're Harry and Shawnee, definitely whether you're Flick and AK, who might seem like more in the middle, whether you're Brooke and Lockie, who are on the top, so much reason to understand, like, how you could come up in the majority of that 6 if it comes down to it. And then I just feel like Matt Rogers, you know, even, you know, in not voting for John, he's really trying something. Like, yes, he gets blindsided. Yes, they don't flip with him. Or maybe not blindsided because he played his idol. But yes, they don't go with his plan. But he's hoping they do. And if they do, he's bought himself more than just a couple of days by saving the idol. He has, you know, got himself a majority that might get him to the merge that would really get him to a very big power position. So he's put his faith in that. It didn't work out. He obviously didn't have that much faith in it because he still played his idol, which he absolutely had to do in a dangerous position like that. He sat on it as long as he could. So much props for that. I have no problem with how anyone played this vote. Like, it's boring, but it's good.
it was just a bit down the line. And I think sort of the first sort of shot we got after the challenge was, okay, guys vote. Was it guys vote, John, girls vote Matt, or the other way around, something like that? And that's what happened.
Yeah.
So all the extra sort of mischief and stuff going on ended up coming to nothing, which, given the way the tribe is set up and the votes went, it makes sense. If the Brooke vote had actually come off, that would have been a huge upset, but it sounds like it all fell apart the last minute. So they just went back to going down the line and getting it, all of them except for John, back onto the next vote.
Yeah, I'm shocked hearing from Harry and Flick that it was that close, because I would have thought it was all bells and whistles, because it makes so much sense to just do the obvious thing. And they try, often, and make it look like this big TV thing. And it, sometimes you hear, like, oh, that was all just for production, for TV. But this time it actually was apparently quite real, and they didn't show how it fell apart. So that's a bit different.
Yeah, but it was the other one that was real. It wasn't the vote for Lockie that was essentially going to happen. It was the vote for Brooke, almost. So that is the real interesting wrinkle for me.
That is interesting. But a flip at all, like, I would have thought that there was no chance of a flip, and apparently there really was.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And I guess the other point is that it's sort of another sort of big move which has fallen apart at the last minute, I guess, especially from Harry's perspective. You had... just before the swap, there was potentially a move to vote out John, which fell apart because Sean pulled out at the last minute. You have this other vote now with Brooke where someone's pulled out at the last minute again, and it's just sort of blown it up in a way which is not ideal for anyone. So I think everyone's just played it safe and gone down the line.
I like how this has worked out for Harry. Like, I like him playing it slow, playing it social, playing it more like post-merge season 4 Harry than pre-merge season 4 Harry, making big moves, aligning with the Godfather. Yeah, I don't love that for him. Like, I think it's good for him that these things are falling apart.
Timing's everything.
Yeah.
Timing's everything for Harry, and I'm glad he's thought about what went wrong last time in terms of how he was positioned and worked on it, and it seems to be in a lot more comfortable position heading into the late post-swap than last time.
Yeah, like he's defending the lack of flip. Like, I don't hate it at all. Like, anyway, so I think it's fine. Yeah, you know, he's teaming up with Matt Rogers. That's a lot. That is.
Yeah, it is. It's a big risky play, but if they, yeah.
From a TV perspective, imagine voting out Brooke and Matt Rogers being in power, and now him just like digging on Lockie even more would have been a really funny reversal.
Yes. But yeah. Oh, man. Oh, Lockie would have not been able to stand that at all.
Political prisoner Matt Rogers is my favorite iteration of the character. We've had Godfather Matt Rogers, we've had Minority Godfather Matt Rogers, now we've got Stowaway Matt Rogers. Just like yeah, I love the change from my cousin texted me, it was like 2 days ago, it was like, ooh, Lockie, look at my idol, Lockie. 2 days later, it's our idol. And the way he like talks up to him, but also kind of like subtly insults him, the soccer stuff.
Yeah, yeah, the subtle digs, they're nice.
I love this version of Matt Rogers. He hates it, but he's got to do it. I think he's done it pretty well. To see someone who's a powerful person in their real life, in who has been powerful in the game, stripped of power, basically like, you know, massaging Lockie's feet, I think it has been also one of my favorite character evolutions of All Stars, which is really fun.
No, it's very humbling. It's very good.
Yeah, but Vakame in general, you can tell why I started the podcast talking about Makuta. I'm just going to say that much. Much as I love so many people on that tribe, it's just like in terms of the vote, again, makes total sense. Keep it boring, but yeah, it is a little boring.
It is unfortunate that we didn't get to hear Flick's perspective on specifically the third vote. It's just like, it seemed like that she was in a position where her and Harry were doing something. Obviously, there was more to it than was shown in the edit, but like, I would have loved to have heard her thoughts on what she was saying going into that vote, but we didn't get to hear it again.
We got a lot of questions about Flick. Zero confessionals in 9 episodes, which is a terrible record to have.
It's not a great record.
It's unacceptable, you know, for so many reasons. Like, firstly, no other franchise is doing this. No other franchise is doing zero confessionals before you get voted out, like they did to Sam on your season. In 9 episodes, 9 very long episodes, it's over a dozen hours of content that we've seen. Flick got the most confessionals in season 1. She had something like 93 confessionals. So you know she can talk to a camera.
Clearly, yeah.
She's obviously not, you know, as important to the story. We know they do main characters and side characters, but at the same time, she was in the promo material. She has definitely earned her all-star spot. She's an all-star. She's got fans who want to watch her, and it's not fair to her and her experience. But beyond that, it's just not good TV because it distracts from the product. All over Twitter, all you hear is Flick has no confessionals, like to the point where that's like a distracting element of the show. You should not do it. Give her one, not even one token confessional. Give her side of the story at least a bit, especially when it is pertinent to the storyline, as it was last night. That's the worst part about it, is that she really was important last night. So it's like, from a TV perspective, from a strategy perspective, from every perspective, it's just baffling, baffling, baffling.
It's weird because I'm sitting there going, oh, yeah, okay, like, we're seeing Flick is in a strategic position. We're going to hear a perspective on it. And when we hear Harry talk about the perspective and we hear Matt talk about the perspective, but not Flick, it's like, ah, it does distract from the action going on in front of you, which I know that when you're in the bubble a bit more, you notice that stuff more, but it's still not ideal to just have people that are just unknown almost to the viewer. Like, I've talked to my family who haven't seen the earlier seasons of Australian Survivor, and I've got a few friends who are still watching it, and they haven't seen the earlier seasons, and they're like, oh, who's Flick?
Yeah.
And it's just like,
she got 93 confessionals in season 1. It's absolute madness. Like, yeah, I mean, for the bubble, it sucks. Like, Flick's my winner pick. I was choosing between her and Brooke, and Brooke, just to get that little more content, is still in winner contention. Flick is not. You know, if she's gotten just, you know, in the first 8 episodes, yes, one every second episode, she's got 4 confessionals, and then she gets 3 last night to explain her position. That's still not a lot, but it's enough to kind of set up where she sits, maybe set up the fact that she's working with Brooke again after everything they've gone through, then to give her perspective as a swing vote. To give her 0 confessionals, she's an all-star, and beyond that, she's on the show. It's so unnecessary. There is so much time, and I do think, like, a lot of people think there's an agenda. Did she piss off production? I don't think so.
No, I think it is obviously sort of overarching narrative thing where they want to paint these people as the storytellers of the show, and then it just means that the other people aren't storytellers, or so don't get as much time, which sucks because there's obviously a bunch of great confessional givers on this season, but there's also people who are also great. Like, everyone's doing well in their own way, and just some people are not being rewarded for that, which is unfortunate. Like, the only reason I can think of in this episode is that, again, the whole Brooke stuff might have been what the confessionals were focusing on, and then when that doesn't make the edit, they can't use the confessionals that Flick has given about the Brooke stuff when it turns out that it's going to be the Lockies where the votes are going from the minority.
To be fair, with all the Frankenbites, they could have made something work. Like, she's the one person you're not willing to Frankenbite. Anything.
If you're determined to Frankenbite, you would get something out of it. But it's all... an organic confessional is always better than a Frankenbite.
But not to Australian Survivor, so it's like...
But Australian Survivor is thrown there. I'm more than happy to Frankenbite to make the overarching narrative make sense. So it's just, yeah.
I just think
there's a lot more room to spread the confessionals around.
It's the Jared effect from season two. That's what my theory is. Like, Jared got no confessionals because he was in lockstep with AK and they always gave the confessional to AK. And it's like, that's what Flick has now, but it's with her whole alliance. Like, she's been in lockstep, with, you know, and swapped with Brooke, AK, Lockie, and they just give them the content. Maybe they're giving better content, or, you know, she's a great confessionalist, so maybe their stories are just going to be more relevant. That's why I think, I don't think it's some big agenda, but I also just think there's enough time to show everyone. And it does seem like she's got her own individual things going on in terms of like the swing vote and whatever, in the fact that she's back with Brooke. Like, she has her own story going on, and you can show it to minimal effect. That's more than zero confessionals.
Yeah, like, and Flick was all over the billboards in sort of the lead up to the show's premiere. Like, she was a big character that was being promoted, and then just, she's not here on the show, comparatively. It's like, it just seems a distance, especially because there is this strong, very strong narrative of the Brooke and Flick in season one, how Brooke ended up leaving the game. Like, there's a huge rivalry to talk about there, and it's just been not being talked about at all, even when it ends up being relevant in what went down outside the edit in this episode. So...
And I know it's not all on confessionals, and I know that, you know, you see her in the auction and you see her, and that's true, but it's very hard to establish someone, especially to people who aren't as keyed in as we are, without seeing them in confessional, without hearing their perspective, without at least being introduced to their point of view, so that the other stuff and the camp life and all the other times you see her are established and make sense. Without that, I think, like, for me, you know, a lot of people have said to me, oh, well, I see her more than I saw Hannah and Sam from last season. She seems like she's more involved. I think that just might be because people know to look out for her because they know who Flick is from her first season, where Hannah and Sam were literally nobodies to us. So
If we had a new player getting no confessionals after 9 episodes, like, then we'd end up in the Purple Kelly levels of knowledge about them, and then they'd get a nickname like that. So it's, yeah, I think overall, I think the key message is spread them out a bit more. We want to hear everyone's perspective. Like, everyone has something interesting to say about any given vote, and there's ways to stitch together into a cohesive narrative still.
Everyone needs to be established. That's why I've said in the first week, 3 episodes, 4 hours of content. In that first week, every single person can get there, like, outside the game package, remind us who these all-stars are. And then, you know, whatever they get after that, at least we've been reintroduced or introduced, if it's not all-stars, to these characters. And then we understand who they are or what they're doing. It doesn't have to be super consistent, and it's not going to be for Australian Survivor. You see the wave the confessional chance goes for Australian Survivor. Like, it's very narrative driven. Someone could get nothing and then get like 15 in one episode. They have these main characters who are like the obvious narrators as well. So, like, it's a very different way to edit it. I just think if they establish everyone and give everyone at least their due when they're relevant, like Flick was last night, that's already a way easier
an improvement. Like, yes,
that's
absolutely.
That's it. I'm not asking that. Yeah, I'm not saying every person needs exactly the same amount of confessionals, but there are very simple tricks to solve this.
Yes, and I think I know that we said just then about confessional counts being the be-all and end-all. I would personally prefer, even though it's harder to track, just like amount of air time that someone gets as opposed to the number of confessionals they get. But overall, everyone should be present. Like, it should. I know that Australian Survivor is more of a entertainment product rather than a game show, I guess you could call it. So they want to have the big main characters, but that unfortunately means you have a cast of extras, which is not what these all-stars should be.
Especially when there's so much time. Like, I think, like...
There's so much more time than other franchises, and they still can't do it.
Confessionals are important. Like, you know, you see Sean in so many camp life scenes, and I think that's why it's been so hard to track her, because as she should be doing, she's just saying what everyone wants to hear. So you hear her talking to, like, Harry and Nick or whatever last week, and it's like, oh yeah, we got to do this plan. It's like, She's telling everyone what they want to hear, whereas at least in confessional, unless they're frankenbiting you, which they often are, at least you can tell the audience authentically how you feel and what you're doing. And then it gives context to the camp life scenes. Like, if Shan has one confessional explaining where she sits, then you have way more context for what she's saying to other people, which is basically all subterfuge. Like, also, so is tribal council. So if all you're hearing from people is the camp life stuff, which is you're playing the game, is the tribal council stuff, which is theater and stuff like that, like, I just don't feel like you're getting to know where they sit. That's why the confessionals, just like these core confessionals, are very important. Yeah. Very important.
I guess the other thing is that Australian Survivor loves to present the mystery of who's going home, to the point of sometimes you have a very fairly straight down the line vote, and it seems like there's excessive levels of twisting mystery stuff going on, even though in reality they might not be as prominent as is being shown. So that is also part of it. Like, maybe these confessionals do exist, but they don't want to quote unquote give away who's going home.
Yeah, but there are ways they can do it. If they can't work it out, they're at fault. Like, it's no one's fault but the editors. Like,
it can be done.
Okay, a couple of things before we get to the chili. Just a couple of loose ends from this massive week. Pandora's box.
Yeah, of course. Yes, the box. The box.
The box. Like, your box of crap, but also kind of a box of crap, right? Like, what was worse?
It's a box of one thing, and which is fine, because there was two keys and only one lock. But, like, yeah, I personally, like, if you want to see people going on Easter egg hunts all at once, this is the perfect way to do it, because everyone's just ran out of camp, scrambling through the jungle, looking for a tiny little key, and then there's also the additional subterfuge of trying to open it without everyone noticing, then it's great.
Yeah, I loved the scene. Like, I'm obviously super biased, but the fact that Nick got it, and you're just waiting, and he has his tiny shorts, which I told you all was too short, and then he couldn't hide the advantage because his shorts were too short, and I was, like, immensely validated. But I really enjoyed it. My heart was, like, in my throat watching it, and you just expect for Nick to kind of have this confessional about how he got away with it, and you expect Dave to come in with a confessional, like, clearly Nick has it, and he didn't. I was like, yes.
No one figured it out.
What a win.
Like, that was the perfect, like, I know Nick has his very short shorts, but that's so the short time when you also carry your excessively large scarf and use that to hide things instead.
What, like a Lady Bulge purse kind of thing? Is that?
Yeah, like, he was trying to use his buff sort of held out in front of him as like a modesty buff or something to distract attention from what he was holding.
The buff is longer than the shorts, so that's why he has to, like, kind of put it like it's a little skirt. The short strategy, I literally called it out, and I was just so correct, which makes me laugh.
Just all this commentary about shorts is very important overall. Like, I think you need a separate outfit watch.
Yeah, we did that a bit on Talking Tribal actually this week.
So. Oh, you did actually? Oh, fantastic.
So important. Like, yeah, you know, I do think that as a reward with a small grazing table, at least they got the grazing table, but this box,
yes,
which were actually, like, when you've just swapped, breed, like, a ton of paranoia, which they all fought so hard for, is, like, the worst reward. And also, the advantage in the box is just an extra vote, which, you know, I've spoken at length about how it's, like, not that extra powerful. Very, very, you know, it has worked before, but it's very situational. It's very circumstantial. It's definitely not like an idol. So they all work so hard for, like, a small grazing table, paranoia, and for one person to get a minor advantage. Like, it is not worth playing for, Jonathan. Like, you don't need to ask. It's not.
Yeah, is it worth playing for? Depends what's in it. Like,
is your box of crap, like, what would you take if you had the choice?
Out of the box of crap?
And this.
Oh, I think I still feel like getting an actual game advantage it's better than nothing.
But you,
like,
only have a 1 in 9 chance of getting it.
Yeah, okay, only one person gets it.
You have an 8 in 9 chance of being disadvantaged because someone else on your tribe now has an advantage that you won for them.
Yeah, when you put it that way, it doesn't sound so great, does it?
No.
But just on the strategy of what you would do when you get to the beach and the box is there and everyone has to go hunt, like, personally, I feel like that within an alliance there should be enough confidence that one person would just stay behind and keep an eye on the box. Like, the fact that no one did that baffles me.
Yeah, I was chatting to Dylan Conrad from Survivor New Zealand about this, and he said this on Ryan Brink's podcast this week, but that is a really good point. Like, yeah, to have the knowledge of knowing who has it is a big one. Obviously, yes. You don't know what it is. So, like, that allure of power, like, what if it is an idol? You just, everyone wanted that. Knowing, yeah. especially that it was just an extra vote, I'd much rather just have the information. And probably yeah. even generally, like, if it's an ally for you, you've got it. If it's not an ally for you, you've made it basically redundant. You know, like, a public idol, if it is an idol, and if you're assuming exactly it's right. the best thing, like, yeah. if it's public, you've depowered it completely. If it's an ally, they're forced to tell you. Yeah, it works if it's an enemy or an ally. I think that makes
yeah, like, sense. And me personally, I'm not a great idol finder or idol hunter.
And who
so
wants to run?
I would. Who wants to run around the forest like looking under stuff? I'd rather just sit there, enjoy the grazing platter, yeah. and just sit back and enjoy the show and watch people run up and run back and talk to each other. No, I would generally prefer to just know who has it.
Yeah, I would love that. Like, you're just sitting on a rock, someone comes there to open the box, and you just like emerge from the shadows, eating your cheese, like, I've been waiting for you.
I've been watching you. Yeah.
That's a lot of power. It is crazy that no one thought to do that. The thing is, like, the people who would think to do that, that, you know, the strategic thinkers, the Phoebes, the Davids, the Knicks, are on the bottom, probably want their own power, and the other yeah. people just maybe wouldn't have that thought. So,
yeah. And I'm also loving food, so I would just sit there and just scoff that grazy table while everyone else is running around. That's me.
I do think, like, if it's the other tribe who get Pandora's box, I could definitely see, like, an AK doing that, because AK is in the majority but is also strategic enough to think about it, is also probably just trying yes. to, like, negate his enemies, but also just, like, have knowledge and power within his alliance, so whoever finds that, he could definitely roll with that. I could have definitely seen that yep. from him, but I don't know who on Makuta is the one to do that.
Yeah, I'd always maintain that knowledge is power, and you can use that to build relationships if you have a shared secret, like Nick and Phoebe did.
Yeah, that's the best way to use something like this. Like, an extrovert, as I've said, not looking great, difficult.
But even Nick telling Phoebe was honestly a good move, because it lured a few people out of camp for Nick to actually open the box, which was great. I'm disappointed that the box couldn't be relocked behind him. That would have been a fun excitement to see Jackie open the box and everyone there and go, oh, it's empty.
Yeah, I was excited to see Nick use it to solidify that relationship, and I think that's how it needs to be used going forward. It needs to be, like, a tool rather yes. than, like a strategic tool rather than, like, an actual mechanism to use, because I don't know how much power that would have. It also is only good to the merge. Like, this is such a minor advantage.
Yes, time-limited, not game-breaking advantages that change socially how everyone interacts are fantastic.
Unless you have to work super hard to win them for your enemy on your tribe.
Like, yeah, true.
What? So unfair. To move to the auction, another really fun part of this,
yes.
this week.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the Nick moment. I just loved it.
Yes, of course. I think that was lovely to see baby Paloma
yes.
and Nick getting all emotional over it. That was genuinely a fantastic moment. And it having met Nick like a few everyone. Times there, I completely get it. Like, it was just really lovely.
Yeah, it gave me so much affection for these people that they, like, or, you know, it's smart of Flick to rise up the money, and so she should. She said she never would have taken
yeah.
it. Everyone, like, Lockie from the one tribe, you know, the Nick's whole tribe let him bid what they wanted. It was just so beautiful to watch. Even Zach was like, bid what you want, mate. I'm like, ah, damn it, Zach, you're breaking no. down my armor just from that one comment.
Yep.
And, like, to see, like, Lee and Nick and that evolution just having his arm around him, like, I just loved all of it. And that's, I love yeah. the emotion.
That was genuinely touching. Also, the TV popping out of the table was a nice little twist. Nice little touch, sorry. But,
yeah.
But I'm just admiring the little things. Also, did AK and Phoebe get messages from home?
I'm
assuming they did that, because they got everything, right? That was what they won.
I've heard that at least Phoebe did. I actually don't know about AK.
I'm assuming they got them, because otherwise that would be a bit of a
yeah, no, definitely at least Phoebe did, but, I mean, there's only so much time, and I guess nothing's, like, as emotional as seeing someone's, like, 8-month-old baby. I got a comment on Twitter being like, oh, I was low-key hoping that the message for Nick would have been from Shannon. And I would, like, imagine the troll. Imagine if it's, like, everyone pulls all their money for Nick to have this. The other tribe let him have it. He goes up to the table, and Jonathan's like, who are you hoping to see? And Nick's like, my baby daughter.
My baby daughter.
Turn on the TV and I'm just like, hello. What a troll. Like, Nick, hope you're doing well.
That would be genuinely hilarious. Like, I would love if, for example, if Shawnee, for some reason, had decided to bid on that message from home, and we pop open the TV and it's like Fenella's there. Like,
yeah, definitely. Like, a lot of things. I genuinely think, like, what a TV moment and what an amazing troll it would be for someone to think it would be their wife and small, small child. And for me to just be like, nope. I really, really like them doing it, you know, pre-merge tribal thing. It had a lot of the fun
kitty,
stuff.
It's an interesting touch to the whole auction thing because you're sharing money, but it's individual things that you're bidding for. So it does make it a lot more interesting in that regard. So I really, really liked that.
They do the auction thing. They don't do it anymore in the US because they feel like it's broken because it became so, as everything in the US, it became so advantage dependent that everyone would just save their money and no one would bid and the auction was broken. But like, this didn't even have an advantage, which like...
No, there wasn't one.
Look, like, you know, it's kind of cool to have an advantage. I don't know if it's so broken in Australia. I still think you could have an advantage and still have a fun auction. But like, it's just fun. Like,
remember what happened last time Nick bought an advantage at an auction?
It didn't go well.
It didn't go well. And I liked in season 3's auction where we had the stealer vote, I believe it was, hidden inside the lolly jar, which Johnny bought. That was an interesting way to do it. I really liked that way of putting an advantage into the auction.
Yeah, I have no problem with an auction just being super fun. Like, you have emotional things. You have the strategy because you have the whole sharing money thing. You have people taking more than they should. John
double bidding. John trying to double up.
Yeah, and, like, the loop advantage of having, you know, a couple of people or one person get everything is always really fun to watch.
The table was always lovely.
Interesting
that Phoebe was the one who ended up bidding for it, though.
Well, she has said online, there's so much online stuff, that...
Yeah, there's so much online stuff,
that
obviously.
Mo bid 500 originally, and then she matched it, and she wasn't the first one. So that's her word.
Yeah.
Haven't heard a rebuttal yet.
Nope.
But, yeah, like, you know, I think it was just, like, this fun way to get strategy out there in a way that is fun, that does personalize these people. You get the John Palmer moment that we're contractually obliged to have before he goes home.
Mm-hmm.
You get, you know, Nick showing a bit of his family. You get... that, like, emotional connection between the players. There could be maybe an advantage, maybe even if it's a small thing, like an advantage in the challenge or get it out of the way early, or it's in the food, or it's not even there. You know what? It's just a fun thing to do, and I'm so glad we have international franchises doing auctions.
You have to figure out how to give it to AK and Phoebe as well as the person who bought the item if it were to go that way.
Well, I think they actually did get that when Luke had it originally, and they did all get it.
Yeah, they did do that. Yeah. So that was also interesting. But I think it was an advantage and a challenge. It wasn't a clue to an idol or something like that, or a power at tribal council. The only way they could have potentially done it was to perhaps somehow hide the clue at auction somewhere. Like, maybe not even – I'm half thinking this as I'm saying it, but, like, hide it sort of on the bench of – stuff that Jonathan's standing at, so you have to actually buy something, go up to the bench, and then sort of grab it without anyone noticing. Maybe that could be interesting. Maybe. I don't know.
Like, this was a week where we had, like, the conclusion of one twist, then another twist, and there was also a swap, and Dave found an idol, and there was Pandora's box. And, like, it's okay to just have something be fun and light and a break from the game. But it's not a break because the strategic element of the money and the sharing and the dynamics that showed is still super strategic without it being, like, so mechanism-focused. I really liked it.
No, I think it was a nice sort of break from all the endless incredible twists.
The auction is not broken.
It's not broken. I just wish we'd got to see the lolly jar that Shawnee bought again, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things you probably don't get to see.
I know, there's more food items, but that one was particular, just to see. Also, Shawnee not going for the Marky. Big shock.
Yeah, so true. I don't know if I would be doing the Avo Toast. Like, as someone who lives for Avo Toast, like, it just seems very, very flimsy. Not a lot of
It did look a little iffy. Like, it wasn't them at a super amazing looking Avo Toast. But when you're out there, you'll take anything. And I know Harry is the kind of person who would have dreamed about the auction for years and wanted to be able to buy something in the auction and probably didn't want to miss out, so just got in early.
It's true. And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And we are back. All right, Baden, are you ready to get to the Chizzy?
I have never been more excited finally be a part of this wonderful tradition that is the Chizzy.
Yes.
I have complete respect for the Chizzy.
That is the exact response that we want. So take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. 1, 1, 1, 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 1.
Okay, so my Chizzy points this week I'm going to give 3 points to Matt Rogers. He was really crushing the Chizzy. I need to get the chart.
Oh, man.
But look, he's got points every week. Chart. In fact, yeah, he's got it. He, both my guests last 2 weeks gave him 3 points. I'm not giving him 3 points. I've given him points as well. So, look, to not play the idol the first two, to not need the idol the first two, to play correctly the third tribal council, to try and make the plan happen, but we've heard, like, why it didn't, you know, in terms of kind of everything switching around, also in terms of, like, maybe the logic of not flipping. It's a hard spot. Look at the way that he was swapped. The fact that he has made it through this week, only needed his idol at the end, I just think it's so impressive. I love seeing him play a different way. He's such a threat. He's in such a bad spot. His, all of his allies are on the other side running things. But the fact that he was able to adapt and kind of be Lockie's little prisoner, I think is really impressive. I'm giving him 3 points for that. I'm going to give 2 points for Shan, who I have said is in a convenient spot with her real-life friends and her allies. But avoiding detection, that's the main thing for me. Like, the fact that she is in the middle of everything, does know everything that's going on when it's very, very complicated, and, you know, to not kind of feel like, you know, to betray two plans and go with one, but still, from what we've seen, not get a lot of heat is really impressive. Lee as well. Like, I do love Lee, but I feel like he's following her, so I'm giving her the points. And this one I think might come out of nowhere because we haven't spoken about him a ton, but I'm going to give a point to AK because I feel like he's, like, so underrated as a center of that majority alliance. Like, Lockie is calling him the brains was brawn. Like, what an amazing evolution of that relationship. You know, to be called the brains of the majority alliance is obviously also a really positive thing for him. I feel like he's a massive connector to Harry and Shawnee, which we saw a bit of, and I'm sure is probably even more the case. You know, Phoebe chose him at the auction as an example as well. Like, look how good his social game is. I feel like he's so interconnected, comes back, gives the information. Like, it's not super flashy, you know, on Vakama, on the self-driving car, but that's a good thing. Like, I think he's done really well with that. So it doesn't get spoken about as much, but I want to reward it with a point. I'm going to give an honorable mention to Shawnee. Obviously, she came back into the tribe, got her revenge. It was a beautiful spot. That's why I didn't give her a point, because I just feel like it couldn't have been a better spot for her, and that's good luck. Obviously, to even come back in the game at all is good luck with that terrible twist that did save her, so we're grateful for it. But yeah, like, but they showed her social game. Like, they really did edit it so well. Like, a lot of people said Tommy in the last season of US Survivor, you know, who was the social player, never got a sequence like that where the editors could illustrate to us the power of the social game. We saw it for her. We see her swapping clothes with Brooke. We see her doing the other's hair.
Yes.
We've seen her face, like, her skincare regimen, which makes me feel bad, like, that hers is so good on the island. Like, mine could be better at home. She's great. She's on the revenge warpath. She's in a good spot. But I kind of demoted her to an honorable mention just because it was such a good spot for her, and I feel like she did benefit from luck. And as I said, like, I think Mo, people probably expected me to give her points because she won the vote, but I don't agree with the move. I think she was not fully aware about what Nick was doing. I thought the plan was convoluted. And I think she was in a great spot and still could have handled it better. So that's a definitive no on Chizzy points for Mo. What about you?
All right. Okay, so as much as I respect the Chizzy, I haven't put a lot of thought into this.
Okay.
So this might be a bit freestyle, and it's tough to think of one person who's just dominated the whole week. I should have really thought about this earlier. Oh man, it's just too many people to choose from. I actually need a second to think. Sorry, Shannon.
That's okay. You said that you respect the Chizzy, and I'm going to believe you.
Okay, so I think I might I feel like the 3 points needs to go to the tribe that went to tribal. Someone on the tribe went to tribal 3 times. I know that that isn't totally ideal in terms of the way that the votes just sort of went down the line, but I feel like there needs to be there regardless. So I think I'm going to have to give, I suppose I should give 3 to AK.
Okay. Yeah. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, he is the brains.
He's in a genuinely a really good spot. He's not totally sort of not doing anything at all. He's in the sensible majority. He was picked by Phoebe to get the King's Table at the auction. He then got a lot of information out of Phoebe at that auction, which he passed on to the Alliance, which is always a good thing to do. He's in a comfortable spot. He's talking to everyone. I know he got swapped into a good position, which always helps, but I feel like he's playing really well, especially learning the lessons from his last time out. So I think I'll have to agree on, I think I'm going to go there. Yeah, definitely 3 to AK.
I see it.
I might agree with you and give 2 to Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like you said, she's in the middle. She's seen as being a bit more sort of in a position of power than someone like Lee, who's in a similar spot to her. And just the way that she's keeping the heat off her. Like, we have these confessionals of people saying that Sean is the best person to have not won this game, and she's still here and no one's targeting her anymore. Like, that's absolutely incredible. And while it is All-Stars, and it is All-Stars, just to reemphasize that, I think it is actually really good how well she's playing. And I will always stand a fellow runner-up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I think the last one, my single point, will have to go to Harry.
Okay.
Because I feel like he is also playing well. Again, swapped into a slightly fortunate spot, but still not, he wasn't swapped into a majority. Like, he has generally worked hard to get into the position he's in. He was met the Young Attractive Alliance for the first time and just slotted in really well with them. He was in a position to start making moves, potentially trying to take out Brooke. Like, he was in a position to almost do that. So I think I'm going to have, yeah, he definitely deserves that last point. Also, I kind of robbed him of the chance to win the game, so I should probably at least...
This makes up for it. One cheesy point.
One cheesy point. I think that's equivalent to $500,000, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Like, yeah, so that actually does make sense. Like, if in the converter of currency of $500,000 to cheesy points, it is one cheesy point for $500,000. So, yeah.
You're just giving out the money then with all those cheesy points. Jeez.
I know. Well, I mean, they're worth a lot if anyone can ever cash out. So there, we are going to get
what
the
kind of vendor will accept cheesy points.
It's coming. You know, it's like cryptocurrency, which is something I don't understand at all. Much like how cheesy points.
Did you suggest cheesy coin? I'm excited for that.
Yes. Okay. Cheesy coins. Yes, I love that. It's like fire tokens, but way better. So the winner of the cheesy this week, I guess, is a tie between Sean, which I think makes sense. Like, there was a lot of conversation online about how she's not getting a ton of an edit for how interconnected she is, so I think that makes sense. And AK, like, I think it really does make sense. Like, we've looked at this week, like, take out all the Makuta craziness, it really was that Vakama gonging, and so you want to give it to someone from the majority, and AK has been described as the brains of it. Like, yeah, it makes total sense.
And they didn't gun for him. Like, when Matt and John had the chance to gun for someone in that young, attractive majority, they didn't gun for AK. They went for Lockie. So he's sort of sitting, he's sort of like the, is the word regent? Like, not the royalty of the alliance, but sort of the step below, but
the Joker
running it all. The Joker?
like if Brooke and Lockie are the king alliance, and queen,
I think, actually.
What is he? Like, no, he's more like the Jack.
Yeah,
just mixing up my cards.
His deck of cards.
Yeah.
If his deck of cards, he's the Jack.
Yes. Which is, I guess, where you want to be. This is all nonsense.
Exactly where you want to be. Yeah, very happy with how he's playing.
Yeah, and also, like, you know, more Harry and AK conversations always punctuated by a snake on a tree that they probably got just, like, from, like, stock footage from somewhere else. I like it.
No, the terrifying snakes, they're there, apparently, so I'm sure... I think that's actually an interesting little side note. I think on the last day when I played, we just found out there was a snake in the tree above our camp.
That is terrifying.
And we didn't know how long it had been there. So,
oh my God. Was it Harry or was it an actual snake?
No, it wasn't Harry. It was a real snake. And then, like, it came down onto the beach and then it was filmed for a bit. And that's probably some of the snake footage you saw.
Almost definitely. You get that snake footage. But any time that Nick or AK or Harry are talking, it's just like it's gold footage to have.
Mm-hmm. No, if I really want to see the three of them all together, because obviously Nick and AK are best buds in the outside world and have been for a few years being in the same city and playing the same sort of game. And then we had Nick and Harry as the Rascals, and then now Harry and AK as the yet-to-be-named something I'm sure they'll think of. So if we can bring all three of them together, that would be fantastic.
Completely agree. I mean, you can't spell Rascals without AK. You can, but you can't. That's the new spelling.
You can if you spell it with a K instead of a C.
Exactly, and that's what the new... That's what I feel like AK is a rascal. Like, he wasn't on that tribe, but he, like, just definitely is a rascal.
He definitely slots into that beautifully.
Okay, so we have some JLP tweets. So the first one is weird because I'm not going to read it because it was too spicy. And I genuinely, like,
that's
responded being...
thinking of.
Yeah, like, I'm genuinely not going to read it. If you really want to know, like, tweet at me. It's on Reddit. Also, it was just like a joke made about season 39 in relation to Outspoon. Also, okay, that's it.
I think there's two ways to interpret it, and I'm choosing to interpret it as the Chelsea and Dean showmance, which ended
that
Chelsea's game.
That is as generous as you were to John Baden, I have to say. That's not what he meant.
That's how I'm choosing to interpret it, because the spooning did end up ruining
Chelsea's
game.
Can I tell you why you're wrong? Because I went today, I woke up, am I going to pull this tweet? I genuinely had like a crisis of faith. I went to JLP's Twitter and it was deleted. So I could pull it even if I wanted to. So it definitely was not about Chelsea and Dean. And by the way, JLP does not know who Chelsea or Dean are. I just want to let you know that.
Oh God, really?
I mean, definitely he doesn't. Like, in what world does he know that? He definitely knows what happened on season 39, as we all do, and he does not know who Chelsea is. I just want to put that out. That's my opinion. I don't have any, not spoken to him about it, but yeah. Anyway, it was deleted.
Fascinating.
Spicy deleted tweet.
Okay, that says a lot.
Yeah, it does. Okay, he also tweeted another twist. Just stop, JLP. Just stop before I flip a table, damn it. A lot of that this week. JLP referring to himself as if he's not himself. Concerning.
Stop like too many things. I think that is the sentiment.
JLP's Twitter account is being run by Sophie, confirmed. he also tweeted, no need to be jealous of Zach's glutesley. You won Australia's best butt at the Julia Creek Dirt and Dust Festival. Apricot emoji. It's true. Look it up. And I did. Because that's something that happened.
This is what your life has come to now.
It's, you know, this is my job, Baden. this is my work. That is something that Lee won. I don't have more context for it. Like, there was a festival.
It's just a thing that happened.
He had to go up on stage, 2018, wiggle his butt, and he won best butt.
Why am I not surprised?
Oh, it's not surprising at all. And, like, again, like, he did lose the game, but also, how many chizzy points is best butt worth, and how much is that worth in $100,000? This is the conversion rate I want to know. Best butt versus winning the game versus one chizzy point.
I feel like Lee's butt is John's butt to John's butt.
What?
Does that make sense?
No.
I won't try and rephrase that.
Yeah, you know, when I took this podcast and when I took this job, I expected more strategic analysis and less butt talk. This is not...
Well, that was your mistake then, clearly.
Yeah, and now, like, John's been voted out, but, like, there's still so many other options for people's butts to talk about, so I don't expect it to end.
And don't forget the shorts watch.
Yes, shorts watch. I'm doing some important work here. He tweeted, nice outfit, Nick, a wolf in Dave's clothing, # some chump. I think this referred to, like, my favorite bit of editing. It's very, very rare that the editors don't just, like, give Dave a home run and kind of give him a bit of a cell phone, because he was like,
yes.
Who has Pandora's box? Who, you know, there's definitely a wolf in sheep's clothing. Cut to Nick in Dave's clothing, and then Dave literally says, nice outfit. And so Dave is inadvertently saying, based on editing, that he is a sheep and Nick is a wolf, and I love the cell phone. It's beautiful.
That is a fantastic little bit of editing there. Like, sometimes they just have the bits they need and they just nail it. So props to them for getting that right.
Yes. Okay, we have some questions from the listeners. Adam Golding said, what are your thoughts on all the pregame bonds coming into play this far, which we have discussed, but were the season 4 cast disadvantaged from that coming back so soon, Baden?
Yes, I think that honestly there's just not enough time. Like, even the season 3 people have had a whole year to talk things out, to go to an actual reunion and see everyone again in person. Like, there's still people that I haven't seen since the game. Like, the last time I saw them was when they voted for Pia. Like, that is and that is things that unless you actually make an effort to go and rectify that, it's just phone calls and messages which don't ever quite capture the same thing. So I really feel like the season 4 people would be coming at a disadvantage. But I guess the only flip side is that in the pre-gaming phase, the other All-Star contestants might not know for sure how the season 4 people did and how their games ended up. So perhaps there's a tad of mystery during the pre-gaming phase about how that played into it.
Yeah, it's a hard one, because I feel like with season 4, like, the threat of those relationships has definitely been a thing. We've even seen it being mentioned in terms of, like, Harry, John, and Abby on One Tribe. Mm-hmm. But it's like, if anything, it's probably like a more tenuous connection. but it's just more prevalent in everyone's minds, like the worst of both.
Yeah, I think it's more prevalent, but also obviously it has its disadvantages, as Daisy would definitely tell you.
Oh, like, definitely.
Because they haven't had the time to talk these things out in great detail, there's still some form of resentment there. So
also, Dave's and a little then crazy. Obviously,
also, Dave's a little crazy, more than a little crazy. But now Dave and Harry are the last two from season four, and they didn't. They only played with each other for like less than a week. So mm-hmm. I think in terms of sort of bonds made during previous seasons, there's not much left in the season four pool. There's definitely less left in other seasons.
Yeah, season one has not lost a member. And that's crazy.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, like you would assume those are the tightest bonds because they've had the longest time, but they're just not in anyone's mind. And they have, like, you know, situational, but also pretty interesting.
That's actually crazy. Also interesting to point out is that Daisy, speaking of her, was the last Vakama member voted out. And that was a while ago. So since then, it's been all Makuta.
That is a little crazy.
Or original Makuta. So that is crazy that the original Makuta are down to, what would it be, like six left or seven? Like, not many of them compared to the original Vakama.
Yeah, I mean, they lost a lot of challenges and then were on the wrong side of the swap. So it kind of makes sense. Phoebe was obviously voted out, but stayed in the game. So, yeah.
Yes,
true. Vakama domination. Mm-hmm. Owen Craig asks, does starting a season off with mostly physical tasks, leaving out the puzzle component, which we've seen one of many challenges, give the more physical players too big an advantage in the early game?
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
I really feel like the challenges should be, if you're going to have strength challenges, that's fine. And if you're going to have puzzle challenges, that's fine. But like, mix them up a bit. I feel like we had lots of strength challenges in a row, and then suddenly we've gone to puzzles and endurance and other things. Like, just spread them out a bit, mix it up. Like, I'm not a fan of having three challenges in a row involving ropes, because one, it's just sort of similar things again and again, and two, everyone's hands will be wrecked, which is what happened in our season as well. So I really feel like variety is the spice of life, and if you mix up the order of the challenges where possible to test different things every day, so you're not just testing the same type of thing day in, day out.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people were mad at, like, the Abby contingent for calling Shawnee weaker. And, like, objectively, she is physically weaker for, like, the things they need to be doing, which is just, like, carrying big things and wrestling each other.
Yes.
But then she's, like, you know, she's one of the last two with Brooke left in that.
She's two hours in that stress position. But I was not going to be able to do 2 hours in that. Like, oh, my God.
I know, but, like, then you can't blame, like, the Abbeys of the world for not really considering that, because it's not that much of a thing.
Because it's not the challenges. But this is a beautiful life for Shawnee.
Yeah,
for sure. To go from being perceived as super weak to go from, I just went for 2 hours in a challenge. Easy.
Yeah.
Like, and it sounds like, from what I've read, I think it sounds like Brooke was the one who sort of seized up in that moment. So Shawnee was going for longer than that, which is insane. So props to her for doing that.
Yeah, I think it's unfair to the players like Shawnee who don't get to show those strengths. And then it becomes unfair from, like, an editor perspective that we hate on the Abbeys and the Lydias of the world for being so, like, Shawnee's weaker. And it's like, yeah, Shawnee's weaker in the exact specific circumstances of the very, very early game of Survivor, which is true, but, like, super homogenous. And then it makes the fans hate them for saying that, even though, like, there's merit to it. And then, like, look at how Nick crushed that puzzle, how much...
Puzzle, like, King Nick.
Yeah, and he's done so much prep for the puzzles. He's had one so far. He did so much prep for one puzzle. Well, there was, like, kind of another small puzzle in the, like, stage challenge.
That was a teeny tiny puzzle.
Yeah,
one puzzle.
There's been one puzzle, and he did so much prep for it. Like, it just, like, really shifts the balance of the game. Like, imagine if every second thing has a puzzle, then Nick is, like, one of the strongest on the tribe. Imagine if there's so much balance, then Shawnee's one, you know, like, everyone has their strengths, and it's just, it's not any of the players' fault for, you know, getting voted out or for targeting people based on the fact that those strengths just aren't prevalent in the game. That's the game's fault, and definitely the game needs more variety.
Yeah, also those puzzles, the puzzle they have done was probably the heaviest puzzle I've ever seen. Like, it was a puzzle, but oh boy, you needed some big guys to move the pieces around.
Classic Australian Survivor, can't give you a puzzle without also making it, like, the most physical challenge as well. Like, definitely not.
Yeah, I definitely like puzzles I can hold in my hands.
Yes, exactly. It's like a little Rubik's Cube. Okay, last question. Mike Bloom asks, I would love to hear Baden's thoughts on the edit of his fellow runners-up, Sean and Lee. Much like his own game in Season 4, I feel like they're both playing important roles that we're just not seeing for one reason or another. We've spoken a lot about Sean and Lee. Like, I want to kind of take that more and just kind of ask Baden. We saw how important their runner-up connection is, and now we see them working together. Sean had a confessional early on about someone else kind of knowing that really unique experience. And maybe that's a really big connecting factor in what's becoming what seems like an insanely prevalent and like strategically connected relationship. So do you feel like that would hold weight if you were there?
Absolutely. Like, they are probably the two people in the country who can say that they definitively had a really good shot of winning $500,000, like really good, and didn't. Like, it's just incredible that they obviously had a lot of time to talk this out. They both had this shared experience of what it's like to go through the final tribal council and then walk out without the prize. It's tough. And I really think that there's it is the basis for a strong connection there. Whether it lasts, how long it lasts, I don't know. But when you're out there, your shared experiences are the best way to connect. And obviously, like, that's why you see people that you might not expect working together. They're like, oh, I know this person. Oh, I did this growing up. And suddenly they have a connection. So the fact that they have something to talk about, which is truly unique to them in the game, would definitely be something to build a strong relationship on for the game.
Yeah, I feel like if you were out there, I could see you slotting into that alliance if Dave didn't just, like, callously take you out on day one for no reason. Those are your two fates in the game if you're out there.
Yeah, Dave. Like, maybe. But also, like, if there's all these bloody strength challenges, I will struggle anyway. So
there was one puzzle.
There was one puzzle. One puzzle after, what, 2.5 weeks?
3 weeks. Yeah, well, yeah, 3 weeks of one puzzle. Look, they know what they want. The producers
I think at least we got two puzzles before Swap in Season 4, although one of them, one tribe didn't get to because it was in the big box. It was too heavy. So,
oh, my God. In a diamond on where we're at. Baden, that's all I got. What is the hashtag? Because...
Oh, man, we have a few choices here.
Yeah, I've got Cole Bleed Donaldson, but I really like hashtag Chizzy Coins.
I feel like you would really like Chizzy Coin. Like, that is definitely something you should invest in, and converting Chizzy Points into actual currency is a good thing for all.
Yeah, I love it. Like, I love, like, the Harry Potter currency where it's like, what is it? It's like, I don't know, it's like 11 sickles to a galleon or something.
Oh, you want to do something crazy like that where it's weird numbers, like you've got galleons and sickles and nuts, and it's like 37 sickles to a galleon or whatever.
I've now, like, completely forgotten my Harry Potter currency, like, exchange, which is
that's kinda really bad. I think Tessa would be furious you for forgetting that.
Is there a 17 in there? Whatever, it's complicated. I feel like it's just it's like
the imperial system. I prefer metric as a personal preference, but
yeah, I think it's just $500,000 to one chizzy point. Like, that makes sense to me, and it's clean, and you won't forget it. Embarrassingly, on a podcast.
Maybe there's a conversion between chizzy points and chizzy title, like the winner of the chizzy for the season.
The chizzy title is priceless. Like, there's no.
Of course, how could I forget?
So I do think one chizzy point to 500. Yeah, that works. $500,000. Yep, cool. We've worked it out. Okay. Hashtag chizzy coins. Way better than fire tokens. Baden, where can people find you online?
I am lurking on Instagram and Twitter currently, absorbing all the All-Stars fun that is going on. Mm-hmm. It's Baden.Gilbert for Instagram and Baden_Gilbert for Twitter. I'm trying to tweet more, but I'm still learning how Twitter works. Like, I spent like half an hour figuring out how to attach a GIF to a tweet the other day, so I'm getting there.
Yeah, I mean, look, Twitter has its pitfalls. Just, you know, take it slow. Take it slow. It's a lot.
Will do.
So much stuff to announce. We don't have Survivor Global this week. I did have Lisa Stanger last week. Highly recommend everyone checks that out about the Winners at War premiere. Next week, we should be back for week 3 with Survivor South Africa's Mike Fenter. I'm excited to have him on a recap. He's, like you, Baden, like, endlessly enthusiastic, so that's always really fun.
That's always important.
Oh, and by the way, who's on our recap for Australian Survivor next week? Baden, your fellow final tribal council mate, Pia Miranda, will be our guest.
Really? Yes. Oh, can't wait to hear Pia's thoughts on this season. She will have a lot to say, I'm sure, so I'm very excited to listen to that one.
Yes, super excited to talk to Pia. The season 4, you know, people just gifts they keep on giving. Talking Tribal is already out for week 3. That was really fun to record. We've got, like, as I said, a bit of a fashion segment. We've got some analysis. That's like more like your instant analysis. So all the internationals can get that in the podcast feed.
Yes, the podcast. And don't forget the 10-play version. Did I say 10-play right? 10-play.
Yes.
And the Flick Tent potentially at the end of it.
Yes, there is, you know, look, honestly, like, the sneak peeks are still, I think, like, this wasn't, like, a spoiler, but I still think there's like, a lot to show. But
it
if people want that, there's a sneak peek. It's not going to spoil anything huge like it did last week. But, yeah, I mean, there is, we'll say it, there's a flick confessional, okay? She gets a freaking confessional. So, that's great.
So, 10, it's happening.
Yeah, so check it out on 10play. If you can only listen to the podcast because you're international, all the fun visual stuff should be shared on social media at a point. So you can, I'll be sharing that on my channel. Follow me, Instagram, where I share it, Twitter, where I share it, at Shannon Gates. Subscribe to the Reality TV or HapUps feed, where you get all the RHAP content. Subscribe to Talking Tribal, where you get that. Baden, what else? Oh, exit interviews. Oh my God, there's too many things.
Yes, exit interviews.
I feel like Mike Bloom at this point with how much he usually has to plug. I've already put out the week of exit interviews because I had Abby and Lydia, loved my chats with both of them, but John I can only speak to over the weekend. So rather than delaying the whole podcast, I'm just going to attach our chat to the week 4 exit interview. So that's already in your feed. I actually think that's it. I think that's all I got.
Yeah, that's it. I think we're done. Thank you so much for having me, Shannon. It's been amazing, and I'm looking forward to seeing how the rest of this All-Stars season unfolds.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on to chat, Baden. It was so much fun getting to talk to you. My second option was just getting Josh Wiggler back to do it all in Baden impression, but you were even better than that somehow, and that would have been amazing. So thank you so much. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thank you to the listeners, and I will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Survivors.
Adventure of a lifetime.
Adventure of a lifetime.